Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You are listening to the Dom and Colin podcast. Very happy to have you with us. My name is Colin. Dom, how you doing?
I'm feeling good. And after 2 weeks of Big Brother, I'm feeling very morally superior.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'm going to be honest. I'm still very tilted about the events of last night. We're going to be getting into all of that. You know, we didn't have a podcast last week. Today, we're going to be talking about both of the first 2 weeks of Big Brother play inside the house. A ton going on. And as I said, you know, very glad to have everyone with us. And I got to say, even despite last night's events, I'm so glad just to be back talking about Big Brother instead of Survivor. Like, I feel like it's just such a superior game. My enthusiasm hasn't worn off at all, despite, you know, having my man crush slash winner pick slash hero evicted.
Yeah, and I think we've seen over the past 2 weeks just how that disparity in information between Survivor and Big Brother really influences us as viewers, because, like, I think on Survivor, if some of this stuff was going on, firstly, we wouldn't know about it. Like, we wouldn't have the ability to just have unfiltered access to everything that was going on. CBS wouldn't have any pressure on them to show it, and therefore they probably wouldn't air it. We wouldn't even have any idea that it was happening. It wouldn't enter our minds to consider the possibility. Whereas on Big Brother, like, they can't avoid addressing that now, and we'll be discussing all this controversy later. But I think the fact that this is all out in the open, to some extent at least, means that there has to be there's just complete clarity about it. And I think that's great, because firstly, it just generates discussion. But specifically for us as podcasters, it's really nice to have that to talk about.
Oh, I mean, definitely. The more material we have to talk about, the better. And I think not only that, but also Big Brother is a game. I know I've used the chess to checkers comparison with Big Brother and Survivor before, and I think recently I've amended it to it's more like backgammon in checkers, where Big Brother itself is just a vastly superior game as far as complexity goes, and as far as, you know, I love having only two nominees out of a giant field and weekly opportunities for power shifts where, like, if someone's down material even in chess, like, it's basically game over for a lot of the times. But in backgammon, at least they're going to have some kind of shots potentially. And I think Big Brother is just all the, a much better game for all of that.
Yeah, I think on Survivor, generally, once we hang out the microphone for 1 week, we can usually predict with a fair amount of certainty what's going to happen in the next few weeks in a lot of seasons. Obviously, there were some exceptions, like the post-merge in the Philippines, for instance, was fantastic for precisely that reason, that it was just so much less predictable. I think the first few weeks of Big Brother, every season, and particularly this one, just illustrate just how crazy things can be. Like, for the first 10 or 12 days or so, we just basically had no idea what was going on because votes kept shifting back and forth. You know, it was unclear who exactly was aligned with who. On Survivor, we get this 40-minute snapshot of a much smaller time frame of events. Whereas on Big Brother, so much more is happening. It's a lot more dynamic, and obviously again, that's great for people who are fans of the game and who like to weigh up all of these different options.
Yeah, and I know there's a big crossover, obviously, between Survivor and Big Brother. I know I got into Big Brother because ostensibly it just looked like Survivor in a house, and I ended up, of course, basically falling in love with the game. And I honestly, I'm hoping, you know, if this podcast can do anything, it's to help people recognize, I think, that Big Brother is a much better game as far as I'm concerned. And despite, like, the cartoonishness of the show, I still think it's always the one that I would much prefer to be talking about. And I think, Dom, speaking of crossover, a couple of shows that we're going to be talking about soon that we've yet to cover before but are very excited to be getting into, we've both gotten hooked on Whodunit, which is on ABC. It's a lot like The Mole. And we're definitely going to be podcasting about that very soon with one of our good mutual friends, that being Jay Fisher. You may know him from the Survivor Historians podcast. And additionally, our first ever movie cast. It debuted last night. We both watched it today. And that is, of course, Sharknado coming at you. We're going to be podcasting about that. Dom, you excited?
Yeah, if you haven't watched it, then go and check it out. It's a cinematic masterpiece like no other. I think part of what was great about watching it for a lot of people was doing it live with so many other people, like, discussing it on Twitter and everything. We watched it. We were late to the party in that respect. We only watched it this morning. But it was all a lot of fun. And it's one of those movies which it kind of crosses that borderline between being bad and being intentionally bad, like being bad and being so bad that it's actually good. But I think it's firmly over that line at this point. I think it's incredible, and I hope you all do too.
Yeah, and about a third of the way through that script, they must have just started phoning it in like, fuck it, let's just go whole hog on this. Let's just make this into a disaster of a disaster movie. All right. So the other thing that I think we want to get out of the way before we start talking about everything that's been going down is, of course, what everyone's talking about is the controversy going on in the Big Brother house, all the, you know, offensive remarks being made by several of the house guests. We're definitely going to be getting to that, and I think we're going to try to push that towards the end of the show, just so we can kind of focus on that specifically. And we'll be talking through the first few weeks, but definitely don't tune out early. This is how we hook you, because we will be getting to that surely in due course.
Yeah, there's been an actual metric ton of racism. But let's not count out misogyny and homophobia as well. There's a lot of that to go around as well.
Oh, no, you know, that's what we like to see in the Big Brother. I shouldn't say it's what we like to see, but it's at least interesting in the Big Brother house. And there's definitely plenty to be getting to. I'm going to clarify. We definitely don't endorse misogyny and homophobia.
Just be perfectly clear about that. I mean, it's always been there to some extent. There's always been, like an undercurrent of bigotry with some people. And every season you have one or more, like, ignorant fools who just spout off randomly and can't contain it. But I think it's happening. But this season, I think it's happening on a scale which we haven't really seen before on the show. Maybe with Big Brother 9, but I think back then there wasn't this kind of social media exposure that there is now, where everyone who's offended about this can take to Facebook, can take to Twitter, and really make their views known. And I think this publicity, as we said at the top, is what forced CBS to actually consider airing this, because I think they wouldn't have wanted to take that risk otherwise.
Yeah, well, I don't think they would do it if it was like Alyssa spouting off all this racism.
Well,
nonetheless,
if you think back to Big Brother 13, you had Jeff going on homophobic rants all the time, then they ended up hiring him after the show ended. So, you know, this isn't unprecedented by any means, but I think maybe it's the fact that so many people do it, and the way in which, like, it's directed at not only certain groups of certain people in the house, like, it was just unavoidable that it would reach this pitch.
Oh, definitely. I mean, with the kind of enthusiasm that some of these people have for racism and misogyny and homophobia, it definitely is something that CBS is going to have to address eventually. And we'll definitely, like I said, be talking about all of that, plenty to say about that coming up towards the end of the show. Now, I know the last time that we talked to you guys was our preseason podcast, so it's been a little while. We're going to be talking about, some of our predictions that we made. Some came true, some not so much. For instance, one of us may have lost our winner pick. I don't know. We'll find out.
Well, also, it feels like the stakes are much higher this season, because you can make a winner pick, and it turns out that there's a 50-50 chance that they're just a glaring bigot that hates Jews, black people, whatever.
Yeah, all right.
I think Spencer, it turns out he likes Hitler. You know, not many people do, but I managed to pick him, so.
Yeah, you know, that'll happen. So I think the place we want to get started, Dom, is actually just because the last time we talked was before we'd actually seen any of these people in action. What did you make of actually getting to meet these people and finally seeing them on TV?
Okay, so the season started, as every season does, with that kind of corny segment where we see them get their keys. I mean, obviously they've already got their keys by this point, and they have to reshoot it to make it look like they're surprised or whatever. But as contrived and as embarrassing as it is, it's always kind of revealing. Like, so for instance, we get to see Alyssa's vision board, which she says is like her divine plan to win Big Brother, where she's listed all of the Big Brother winners and missed about half of them. Of course, there was June with an E. I think there was a Boggy at some point.
There was definitely a Boggy in there. Yeah.
Yeah. she listed herself there, not much below Rachel. We get to see Candice at 26. She found out she was adopted. Now, I like this because She found out she was adopted and met her black family for the first time, where she'd been living with the white family before. And I'm thinking, unless I've misunderstood this, did she just not realize for 25 years that she may have been adopted by this family completely different color from that?
It's like there's a famous YouTube clip of the Maury Povich show, which I don't know if over in England you know who Maury Povich is.
Absolutely not.
It's basically the entire premise of the show is people finding out who the true parents of their kids are. And there's a very famous clip of this white woman and white man, and the white guy's like convinced he's the father of this child who is in fact black. And he's like stunned to find out the result. Yeah, that was basically Candace. All right. Anything else actually before we just kind of get rolling with it?
Yeah, so after we get that, we see them being brought to the front of the house. A very nice house this season, by the way. I think amidst all this controversy, not much attention has been paid to just how attractive this set is.
Yeah, there were a lot of, I don't want to say complaints, but there were cries of stealing from Big Brother Canada. It certainly looked enough like the Big Brother Canada outdoor, but I don't feel like it's stealing when it's just a massive upgrade that makes total sense.
Yeah, if we're going to accuse one Big Brother franchise of stealing from another, let's accuse Big Brother Canada of stealing every fucking other thing from Big Brother US.
Yeah.
The whole format of the show, the whole premise behind it. But secondly, like, good architecture isn't the preserve of one particular franchise. I'm glad that they're at least taking ideas and developing them, if if that's what makes the house look better.
Right, like the fashion's going to change every year to year, and now that we have this more modern architecture, there we go. And I do very much agree that it looks quite cool.
It looks very silver and metallic for some reason.
Oh, yeah. I feel like it was similar on Canada, where it's kind of like we're hanging out the outside of this apartment where these people are eventually going to come out the front door, where it's much less like it's a studio.
Yeah, one other thing I thought was strange was that when the way the house is set up this season, the walkway from the front of the house to where the contestants are interviewed by Julie, it's not surrounded by people. Like, they're all kept in this, like, concave pen a few feet back. And I used to like it before when people would come out and they would just be mobbed by the crowd, and they'd be shaking hands and performing or whatever, and they'd walk out. It gave it this kind of, gave this really interesting atmosphere. Whereas now it's just like they walk out and people react, but it's not personal in the same way.
Yeah, this may be something, I know we were going to probably get into this later, but what do you think about having the live crowds? I think BB10 is when they brought them back. What do you think about that whole idea? This is something I can't believe we've never talked about.
Oh, I've always liked it. It always seemed a bit anticlimactic when some big thing went down in the house, like somebody got blindsided with a vote or whatever, and they'd walk out and there'd just be no reception.
Yeah, there'd just be like that casual music, dun, 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 dun.
And to some extent I liked it because, like, it maintained the gravity of what was going on. If somebody's just been blindsided and they're really mad and they're upset and they walk out and everyone's there cheering for them, that's going to diffuse the situation a bit. They're not going to be as angry. Whereas if they're walking out and it's complete silence and it's just them and Julie, they can just say whatever they like because there's less of a sense that they're in this supportive environment. But I think that's outweighed by the advantage that having the live crowd there bestows, because it just makes it a lot more fun, I think.
Yeah, in the shocking news that will shock you department, I hate the live crowd. I definitely don't get down with it. I don't like that there's a potential for the house guests to hear any kind of response from actual, from the actual fans of the game. I feel like that can only serve to influence the game, and I'm willing to sacrifice that kind of live energy for a more neat game and more clean game.
Yeah, it might end up being accidentally a good decision because I think it's a serious possibility that Erin might have to fear for her personal safety if there was a live crowd. There was a live crowd out there when she was when she gets evicted, because I don't think we've had this level of negative reaction towards a contestant pretty much ever. I think maybe Shelley in Big Brother 13, but there you have the Jeff and Jordan fans going crazy, and that was always going to happen at some point, just given their massive base of support. In terms of what a contestant's brought upon themselves, though, I think this pretty much tops anything that I can remember, unless
I would say like Kathy from the Friendship back in the day, but that's basically it. And one can argue what Shelley brought on herself, but it was going to happen to someone. It was just whoever ended up most directly screwing over Jeff and Jordan, and Shelley got absolutely jobbed.
Yeah, I mean, there have been a lot of people who have been tremendously unpopular before, like you think Ronnie or whoever, but typically these people don't last long enough in the game to really make that much of a lasting impact. And it looks like Erin may be going out the same way. Like, I would be impressed if she survived this week, for instance, if Jeremy... even if Jeremy doesn't win the POV, I think that there's a decent chance she could be going. But in that short space of time, she somehow managed to alienate pretty much everybody. that's impressive.
Yeah, no, it definitely... all borderline admirable? I'll say no. I just try to alienate as many people as I can on a weekly basis, so I have some kind of respect for that. So, okay. I think the place to be getting into this is with the first HOH competition. Let's get moving. And this is the one, the popsicle stick competition, where they just had to hang on to the popsicle, and the last person to drop would win, and that person ended up being McCray after Nick dropped when guaranteed safety. So let's talk about this, because I was honestly shocked to see Nick and McCray as the last two people hanging on, because I thought both of them would definitely be throwing it. But let's get it, because I've had a change of heart about the validity of winning this, so let's get right into it.
Okay, well, yeah, and that, and also, even if they were minded to try and win it as hard as they could, there would be other people out there, like Jeremy, who would never throw a competition in his life, who you'd expect to maybe outlast them, so it's impressive that they managed to beat him at any rate. But yeah, I'm not surprised that you were initially opposed to him trying to win it, but, you know, I don't really see why he shouldn't. Like, the reason he gave, and I think it's pretty sound, is he felt like an outcast from the very beginning, and there are reasons why people might want to come after him beyond that. Like, he seems pretty strong, and for some reason there was this perception that he was smart, and more on that later. But, you know, given that he feels that way, winning HOH for the first week is, like, it's a great way to force people to come to you, even if they might not want to. And when they do that, like, it's cemented in their mind this idea that you're, you know, you're just an ordinary guy. You're someone who they could consider working with, rather than them just maybe not even thinking about that in the first place.
Right. Yeah. No. The thing that cemented it for me is that shot in the premiere episode where he like walks into the room. I think it was with Jeremy and Howard and like Jesse or something, and they're talking strategy. But it's clear as soon as he walks in that they're just like done. And I think he got the same reception in basically another room. And at that point, I would be fucking terrified. And that's why I'm, if you're the week one HOH in a 16-player game, there are going to be people who are going to come and just sell their soul to you for safety in the first week. And that's why, at the end of the day, as much as an advocate as I generally am for throwing competitions, I totally am fine and would more so actively endorse McCrae winning this first HOH. And I actually very much liked it. And for reasons that we ended up seeing, basically, is the moving company, which we'll be getting to shortly, ended up forming around him, and I don't think he would have been included otherwise, basically. Like, if he didn't have this kind of power, I think that's basically the reason that he's got such a relatively sound position in the game, or at least several relationships at this point that he can work with.
I don't know about that. I think he would have been brought in anyway, just because if you are trying to get this group of all guys together, then you really don't have that many other people to choose from.
Well, like, I feel like Judd was left out, and Judd probably was the more natural fit if McCrae wasn't the HOH.
That's true, actually. I'm not sure why Judd wasn't included in that. Like, maybe he just gave off a bad first impression?
I think that, I don't know. I think five was enough. I don't think six is a very realistic number to be rolling with.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at who else it could have been, though, like, the type of people who try to get all male alliances together usually wouldn't really want to include the gay guy, I don't think. I'm not saying Nick's homophobic or whatever, but just generally that's how it goes. If you're trying to get this alpha male macho group together, then you're not going to include Andy, for instance.
Right.
So, like, beyond that, who could it have been other than McCrae? Even if you don't want to include McCrae, like, you need people to get the numbers together. And if you're drawing from a pool of eight guys, then you're probably going to have to consider him anyway. So.
Well, I feel like the moving company probably would have stopped at four had Howard been the HOH that week.
Maybe, although, like you said, in a 16-person game, four people really isn't going to cut it, I don't think.
No, but at least for the core of the moving company. Or, you know, I guess...
Okay.
Yeah,
I mean, discussion about the moving company turns out isn't going to be particularly relevant, given that it's pretty much a dead thing now, but obviously it's worth mentioning just because it plays a big role in how these first 2 weeks play out.
Right.
So,
sorry, just to jump in. I think it's more adding to the merit of McCrae winning that first HOH, because as far as I'm concerned, he would not have been included were he not HOH.
Sure.
All right, so go ahead.
One thing I thought was funny about McCrae was, typically we see this thing where people, almost no matter what their occupation is, seem determined to deny it and to say that they're something more, like, innocent, I guess. Whereas here we get the exact opposite. McCrae's just sincerely telling everyone that he's a pizza guy, and people seem determined to not believe him and think that he's hiding something. Like, Amanda says that she gets genius vibes from him, which may explain some of her nighttime activities later. Helen and Andy both also say that they think he's hiding something. I'm not sure why. Like, he doesn't seem stupid, but again, like, he just, you could conceivably see McCrae as a pizza boy. Like, why?
Oh, easily. I mean, just his haircut alone screams pizza boy, right? Like, yeah. No, there was definitely, I thought that was one of the more interesting things and I was honestly hoping when he won the HOH that he would get some kind of piece of evidence to corroborate his pizza boy story, like his jacket from work or something, I don't know. But yeah, because I thought it was definitely funny that whole everyone thinks McCrae's just this secret genius. All right, I think the next thing that I know both of us were very excited and curious to find out the details about is the actual MVP rules and the rule set that we're going to be playing with, given this horrendous twist that's just doing its best to destroy the sanctity of the game. So the way this is going to end up working is the MVP of the week is going to be voted on by America, and they're going to be informed of their status secretly in the diary room, and they can also nominate secretly, but they are free to tell other people that they're the MVP if they're so inclined. And, of course, Alyssa ends up winning both of the first ones. And I think this is as good a time as any to be getting into. What did you think about the design of the way this MVP was going to work?
Okay, it's a sort of thing where, in theory, I might like it and I might be interested to see how it plays out, but I don't have enough faith in the producers to not implement it in a way that just completely fucks everything up.
Yes, that is exactly correct as far as I'm concerned.
So I think the first interesting feature of this is that the MVP is going to be anonymous. So whoever gets this finds out in secret, they don't have to tell anybody. Obviously, people have to find out who their nomination is, but that decision can be made by them and them only, and no one else really has any input.
Yeah, the thing for me is, like, it was clear they were telling them preseason, just through the Matt Maynard interviews, that this was going to be the season of no floaters, and floaters grab a life vest, and so forth. I don't understand how the way that they've designed this twist, it's anything but the opposite, as far as if you could make a nomination anonymously, go ahead and take your big shot, you know? Like, it seems like it would only encourage being a floater.
Well, I think the idea is that a floater wouldn't ever win it because they wouldn't be making enough of an impression to capture the audience's attention in that way. The thing is, though, like, Alyssa managed to win it, and I think had she not been forced into that spot, she would have ended up being what most people would call a floater. I think just in general, the issue with that is just the way that the term floater is understood by most people is, like, you see it in the house all the time. Well, so-and-so's a floater because I guess they're not winning competitions, or they're not yelling at people, or they're not taking a stand when it doesn't benefit them to do so. Like, right. there's this pervasive misunderstanding of what good Big Brother gameplay should be, and anyone who doesn't meet that standard is automatically labeled a floater.
Right. If you've got 16 people in the house and there are 100 days to go and you're a floater, good. Like,
yeah.
That's right where you want to be.
It's become this generic term of abuse for anyone who isn't on the same side as you. Like, I remember in Big Brother 13, Jordan was going around calling other people floaters. Like, where does she get off saying that about anybody? It's just, I guess the idea behind the anonymity is that it means that if a floater does win it for whatever reason, then they're not going to be scared of making, quote-unquote, a big move and putting one of the important players up because they don't have to fear the consequences necessarily. Like, they can take their shot, and if it doesn't work, then fine. Like, if it can't be traced back to them, then they don't have to suffer from that.
Right, no, and the other thing is, I understand the idea of, hey, if you're a floater, you're not going to win MVP. That's fine. If you're not a floater, you're not going to win MVP either, because Alyssa's going to win it every single week because she's Rachel Riley's sister, and I feel like everyone in the house knows that already.
I mean, leaving aside Alyssa winning because she's related to a former house guest, your worry has to be, as producers, that the same person is going to win it every week, right? Because unless they do something which dramatically diminishes their popularity, if people voted for them the week before, then there's no reason they wouldn't vote for them this week.
Right, but I've always said, I think one of the biggest caveats that makes Big Brother such a great game is the fact that you cannot win HOH back-to-back weeks, and I would have loved to have seen the twist where you can't win MVP back-to-back weeks.
Yeah,
I think that should have been the rule.
Yeah, if they had added that qualification, I think it might have been a better twist. Of course, given what they intended for using it for, they could never add that qualification because
right.
It's designed explicitly to let them keep one person safe and give them all the power for a week.
Well, not even necessarily
for every week.
Right, yeah, but as long as they're in the house, they're going to keep banging them off. Do you think there's any chance that as long as Alyssa's there, she does not win it?
I'm not sure that they intend to keep it all the way through. Firstly, because I'm not sure they can. Like, logistically, having three nominees isn't something you can really maintain past, like, the final eight or so. But also, yeah, I think they have to apologize at some point, but I think they're going to leave the timing of that up to if Alyssa is in jeopardy or not. Like, once Aaron and Jeremy and Caitlin are all gone and no one really has Alyssa on their radar, then I think they might be more inclined to abolish it at that point.
Yeah, see, I was sitting here thinking that they were just going to abolish it at final 12 no matter what, much because they like having 12 people. Like, last year they had 12 people at the reset. Now that you mentioned that, I think that's a very good point. As long as the people that are coming after Alyssa are still in the house, I could easily see them keeping it up. But I think, to answer my own question, there's no chance that she's not going to get it every single time that it's available, as long as she's there.
Yeah, so I think the other thing to note right now is that the MVP gets to decide who the replacement is going to be if their own nominee wins veto or is vetoed for any reason, which I guess makes sense. If you're going to award this power in the first place, you want that power to remain throughout the whole week. But at the same time, it does ensure that whoever's MVP, it gets to say who one of the final nominees is going to be no matter what. And so potentially that leads to what we saw this week during Aaron's HOH, where the HOH is basically irrelevant if they're not on the same side as the MVP and the MVP has numbers.
Right. If the MVP has numbers and you win HOH as the minority alliance, congratulations. You yourself have immunity. Nothing else matters. Your nominations are completely irrelevant.
Yeah, that's basically what it is. Like, and that's what the game is turning into at this point. Jeremy, Caitlin, Gina, and Ree are basically playing competitions for immunity as Survivor post-merge in a nutshell.
Yeah, and I mean, of course, that completely detracts away from what I consider to be, like, honestly, the beauty of the Big Brother game. It completely removes that element, which is why we've said, I think, you know, basically since hearing about this, this twist is doing as much as it can to just completely destroy the sanctity of the game.
Right. If you think about the reasons you might have for instituting this twist. I think you have the cynical one, which is they just want to rig it in favor of whoever their favorite contestant is, and this is an easy way to do it. The more charitable view, and I think this is how it could be under a different production team, is we want this to create more drama, we want this to lead to much more interesting gameplay, and I think it could do that because, if you wanted to go down that route, you would, I imagine, make it secret, you would divide it in something like this way. However, if you're just going to let the same person win it week by week by week, then that removes all possible suspense, because as long as you know who that person doesn't like, you know who's going up and potentially who's going home.
Right, and no, and I mean, from a television standpoint, it's not even entertaining. We know Alyssa's going to keep banging off every single MVP, which is why the caveat of under a different production team, under a capable and ethical production team, this would be a much different thing that could, in fact, stir up the game. But under the current production team, it's always just going to be abused.
So if you were just interested in the game and you didn't care about any of the personal drama, the only thing you would have to find out in order to know exactly how a week was going to play out at this point is who won POV, basically. And beyond that, there's just no room for suspense whatsoever. Like, you don't care who the HOH is, you know who the MVP is, and you know, therefore, who at least one of the final nominees is going to be. So, like, what else is there to care about?
I mean, as far as production's concerned, hey, Alyssa's still in, so that's good for us, right? Like, that's what there is to care about. You're exactly right. The POV winner is basically what's going to matter, and otherwise the MVP target's going to go.
Bringing Alyssa into the season, that just feels like such a waste. Like, you can tell that this is what they're pushing. They want her to be in there for a while, and this is the only way to ensure that, given that, hey, she's Rachel Riley's sister and shares some of the less appealing personal qualities that Rachel has. Like, this is the only way you can ensure she's going to be there for a long time. And so I guess this is what you have to do. But to me, that doesn't suggest that you should be doing it. It suggests, why have Alyssa there in the first place?
Right. Well, I would say why have Alyssa there in the first place is to ensure that you know with certainty where MVP is going to go every single time.
Well, no, I'm saying that you could have MVP in there just as the one twist that Big Brother has this season, given that you want to mix it up in some way, and not have any kind of returning players or any other, like, external factors being brought in.
Right, but that would be good and fair, and that's not what they're interested in.
Right, like, the moment you bring someone in with a pre-bought fan base, it pollutes everything else. Like, it affects how everything else is going to play out, no matter what your other intentions with regard to twists or anything like that.
So, a few other things, I think, because this MVP thing is certainly very interesting just to talk about as far as how it could potentially impact the game. When Alyssa was under hot water this first week, Gina Marie, of all people, floated out what I thought was a very good idea, which is they knew Alyssa got MVP. I don't know within the rules if she's allowed to do this, but if she's concerned about getting backdoored after not being an initial nominee, can she nominate herself? I know you don't know the answer, but the idea of nominating herself to ensure at least that she gets a shot in POV, what do you think about this idea? And we don't know if it's possible.
I think it's a very interesting idea, which is, like you said, I'm stunned that it came from her, of all people. It's something which I think you'd only want to use when you're as desperate as Alyssa was, where everyone wants you out before you've even won MVP, and you just need to find a way of surviving through the week where you're not in a position to use the MVP power. And this is another reason, by the way, why having Alyssa be the log MVP every week is such a waste, just because you know that she can't do all this stuff on her own and that she needs this power just to survive, which means she can't use it in any kind of creative way. Like, she can't use it to its full potential. She just has to use it to stay in the game every week.
Right. Well, I think that's a very interesting concept as well, is the idea of deception value when you do the MVP. Maybe nominate someone, nominate yourself, and then, Alyssa, who has claimed the MVP power and admitted to having it, could suddenly admit not say anything in week three and then nominate herself and ensure, or nominate anyone and just not claim it and have total credibility.
Yeah, the analogy I was going to use when we talked about it on the P-Show podcast was, for those of you who have played Werewolf, I guess a lot of people call it Mafia, it kind of reminds me of the Seer role, where in a perfect game where you have lots of good players playing at their best, there should be lots of claiming and counterclaiming as to who the Seer or MVP here actually is. And so there should be a lot of room for deception about that. When you have someone like Alyssa who is just going out to people and openly telling them that they're the MVP, you know, there's just no room for any of that.
Right. I mean, do you see value in counterclaiming? Saying, no, she's not. I'm the MVP. I just got it.
Well, I'm trying to think about under what circumstances you would want to do that.
Right, I don't see it. When she's been so forthright and when it seems clear, I think it's different. But I think certainly in a field full of game bots where the MVP is being done legitimately, if the MVP is even in there, there's certainly value in counterclaiming. Because if people view the MVP as someone they can want to keep in, because if they have the MVP on their side, then it doesn't matter who wins HOH.
Yeah, I think it might be rare that you want to counterclaim, because if you think that the MVP is someone in your own alliance, then counterclaim is only going to alienate them. So it would have to be someone who isn't in your group. But I think you'd only want to counterclaim if you are taking... because you'd have to think being MVP puts a target on you, although we'll get to that in more detail in a minute. You'd only want to counterclaim if you think that the MVP has done something that you would want to take credit for. And if they're not in your group, then they're unlikely to have done that. So.
Right, yeah. It would be like, I would honestly say, like, wait till a week after and then say, yeah, I let Alyssa take all the credit for it, but this is in fact what I did. Or wait several weeks after, or even facing the jury, say, oh, no, that was me.
Right, but even if some of these scenarios are unlikely, the point is that they should be at least things that are possibilities that we might actually see in a season if the MVP were in place. And as long as someone like Alyssa is wielding that power, then it's just never going to be. So, like, talking about more of them, I think the idea of nominating yourself, like, if being MVP makes you the target, then there's no better way to convince people that you aren't the MVP than by nominating yourself.
Right, and no better way to ensure that you play veto.
Yeah, and obviously it's incredibly risky, but if you have the confidence to think that you have, like, all the votes in place, you're definitely going to say, why not do it, you know?
Right, and potentially, if people are all freaked out about who the MVP is, you may raise the likelihood that someone just spaz takes you off the block, and you get to name the replacement.
Right, like, now let's say you're trying to let's say you're trying to plant seeds against someone in your own alliance, like maybe you think they're the most rational player after you, you want to move against them before they can do any damage. You might want to nominate yourself and pin it on them to make them think that they've turned, to make everyone else think that they've turned against you before, like, it was in the terms of your agreement or whatever, as a way of, like, creating suspicion on them for next week, which obviously obviously a very outside-the-box play, but you can see some of the great players doing that if this service were in place.
Oh, if there's someone who just has random personal beef with one other person and no one else would conceivably nominate them, if you're MVP, go ahead and nominate that person and you can always pin it on the other guy.
Like, alternatively, even if you don't want that person out in the short term, maybe just nominating someone when you know they're going to be safe as a way of making them just spaz out and maybe react in a certain way. Again, that could be another play that you could use if you were thinking creatively, but again, Alyssa's not the type to be able to do that.
Right, or nominate someone who you know is just never going to leave.
As a way of, okay, as a way of, like, turning them into a possible buffer.
Potentially, or, I mean, just decreasing suspicion and arousing suspicion of from other people. Someone who, it doesn't even make sense, potentially, for you to be nominating them. If you know they're safe, there's at least that layer of deception.
Yeah, you could take, like, the Dr. Will approach, where you say, If I'm on the block so often that people just become accustomed to the idea of not voting me out, then why not put myself up there often enough to give them that thought?
Yeah.
Like,
again, it's very, very risky. And it's nothing, this is the problem. We talk about this, but it's nothing Alyssa would ever consider. And right. It doesn't seem like anyone else is going to be winning MVP.
Yeah. It's like the natural fall of the stress, I think, is that the type of people who would be able to use it to its greatest capability probably don't need to if they were able to get it. They wouldn't want to put themselves out there like that. So you end up, like, the best case scenario for it to create drama is some, like, mid-tier player acquiring it and not really knowing what to do and just doing something stupid and it all blowing up. Which, I mean, obviously it's great for 1 week, but you can't rely on that if your show being entertaining.
Right, just, like, give it to Amanda randomly 1 week and figure out what she's up to, right? Like, or let her do whatever.
Yeah, like, I would have much less of a problem if they actually just explicitly gift it to whoever they thought would create the most drama, if they were clear that that's what their purpose was. This idea that they're going to let America vote and it would be this great democratic process when it ends up in Alyssa's hands every week, which I don't doubt that that's a sincere reflection of what America wants. I accept that there's a great base of Jeff and Jordan fans out there who are supporting Alyssa by proxy. But that, you know, the pretense that this is any kind of, like, open process is just ridiculous. Like, if they want to give it to Amanda or Spencer or Howard or, hey, give it to Erin and see what she can do with it. Like, if they want to do that, then great. But at least be open about what you're trying to accomplish with it.
Right, that's why I've said I feel like Alyssa was put in the house to make sure that they knew where MVP was going to go as long as she was there.
Yeah. On that note, by the way, how many degrees of separation do you need to have from Jeff and Jordan in order to pick up their fan base's support? Because it's like, Alyssa's sister was pushed into an alliance with them on a completely different season by someone, by Evil Dick. So it's like, why why would that transfer support over to Alyssa? It just doesn't... I guess the type of people who would support Jeff and Jordan aren't inclined to think rationally, but like, why... It just doesn't make any sense.
Right, and I think they were clearly setting up Helen when, if Alyssa just, if they just let the game play and Alyssa ends up leaving last night, I think they were very clearly setting Helen up to be the recipient of that, which would have been, hey, this person was nicest to the sister of someone who once backed into an alliance with Jeff and Jordan, and like, 4 degrees of separation is apparently enough because it beats everyone else's zero, or everyone else's infinite. Infinity. I don't know what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think you just highlighted another problem with it, which is, let's say something does happen to the MVP for some reason, and they do somehow get evicted from the game, that support is just going to go to whoever their closest ally was, because let's say you have a season like Season 6, where it's clearly divided down the middle, you have a popular side of the house and an unpopular side, even if one of the popular sides somehow ends up as a casualty, then the second most popular person for that side is just going to pick up the reins, and do exactly what that person was planning to do. So, as soon as the MVP is in place, you can pretty much predict not only the results for that week, but also of the next 3, 4, however many weeks, as long as they're still in place.
Right, and I think you can also I think they would be absolutely correct in predicting that, hey, if Alyssa does go, it's not like it's going to be an open field as for who gets MVP. It's going to go to Helen. I think everyone's going to know that, and that may be bad.
I can see it going to, like, Howard, maybe, but, yeah, I think Helen would definitely have to be the front runner.
I think they're trying to give it to Helen, and I think whatever production is trying to do, they're going to find a way to make it happen. Alright, so kind of just moving along through the events of the week, we end up seeing the moving company form. We'll be talking more, I'm sure, about the moving company and all the implications of all that, and now the ramifications of all of that, now that we've seen it kind of getting blown up, spoiler alert, on everything. But first of all, I want to point out, very good alliance name. Although short-lived alliance, very good alliance name. I want to say that. And equally, some props for McCray on being the have-not competition. No one cares at all about that, but he was an outstanding challenge host, and I definitely want to give him some credit where credit's due, because very few people are good challenge hosts in these competitions.
No, very stylish hat as well, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely. It's like Ranger hat.
Yeah. I feel like almost any like big hat would look good on McCray for some reason, like sombrero or anything.
He should. I hope every time he wins HOH, if he wins several, he just gets a different big kind of floppy hat. Yeah. All right. So let's see. We get some showmances forming. We have David and Aaron, Jeremy and Caitlin, and Amanda and McCray. Actually, let's get into a little Amanda and McCray, because this, I think, was the more surprising one out of the three. I feel like Eric Stein has definitely been topped now as far as the sickest pull in Big Brother history, but I had concerns that Amanda wouldn't be sticking around, but it appears that they've, once McCray's HOH power was no longer in play, but it seems like they're at least still going pretty strong there.
Yeah, I talk about batting out of your league. Like you, I originally thought that this was just Amanda sucking up to the HOH in a very literal sense, but the more I watch, it seems like she does actually, if not have, like, genuine feelings for him or whatever, at least she does seem to like him as a person, and they do seem to be getting along pretty well.
Yeah, and I would say, honestly, this is yet another benefit to winning the Week 1 HOH, just get hand jobs from Amanda the whole week. Yeah. All right. So I'm sure, you know, we'll be talking more about these pairs as we move along, because nothing's really subsiding there. Sorry.
If I said to you before the season that Jesse is going to be the only girl in the house, pretty much, who doesn't end up in a showmance, I doubt you would have believed that.
I definitely would not have believed that, because as regular listeners will know, I was head over heels for Jesse, and if I were in the house, there would definitely be at least attempted showmances going on for Jesse. Although, actually, I feel like things have been changing now. It seems recent reports have indicated, and I'm sorry for the people who don't watch the live feeds, what are you doing? I definitely do watch the live feeds, but, you know, as live feed viewers ourselves, that we're going to be talking about it. Jesse has apparently settled for Judd and is willing to take that showman. So not only the bear shirt going in Judd's direction, but also Jesse, some strong work.
Yeah, I admire Judd's initiative in realizing that the pool of potential hookups for Jesse was so thin, especially when Nick was being hauled by Gina Marie, that, hey, why not take a shot? It's not like she's going to be hooking up with Andy instead. Like, who else is she going to go to?
Yeah, no, it's hey, process of elimination works just as well as anything else, right?
I think at this point it would have been Judd, Andy, or Spencer. And I think even in that motley crew, like, Judd emerges as the best one there.
Yeah, that's a pretty tough DMK right there. But, yeah. All right. Actually, let me say something about Jesse, because I know this. I'm sure you have plenty to berate me about as far as Jesse's concerned. the minute we saw this girl on TV, you know, I was so into her just from watching her pregame interview. It was like a totally different person on TV for me. I can't even believe what I saw. And I know last time we talked, I said the Jesse hype train was not going to be slowing down anytime soon. It's already done. It's at a complete stop.
Completely derailed at the first station.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think the moment we saw her say in the first episode that, quote, girls are always jealous of me because of my great personality and good looks, we knew that the future wasn't going to be too bright for Jesse. But it turns out that, you know, when you compare it to all the other girls in the house who apparently hate black people, gays, and you know, just a whole assortment of people, Jesse actually looks pretty good by comparison.
She
won't be winning the Hoda School Lifetime Achievement Award anytime soon, but she's not a vile, terrible person. She at least had that going for her.
Oh, I would say, I mean, probably second only to Candace, as far as for me, it's all relatively speaking. I'm still into Jesse much more than I am into the other girls, but it's certainly not a high bar at this point. All right, so I think from here, the next big thing we want to be getting into is McCrae's decisions for nominations, because, of course, winning HOH is helpful in building these bonds, but this is the downside. This is why, generally speaking, you don't want to win the first HOH, because there are so many people, and it's going to be pretty arbitrary. So let's get into this decision. What are you thinking about as far as potential targets here if you're McCrae?
Okay, I feel like the peculiar set of circumstances this season where you have an MVP and it's Alyssa mean that winning HOH Week 1 is a much more risky proposition than it might be in other seasons, no matter whether it's McCrae or anybody else, just because given who Alyssa is and how she is, like, as a person, you can imagine there would be a sizable faction of people who would just want her gone Week 1 and will put pressure on the HOH to make that happen. At the same time, though, if Alyssa does end up surviving for whatever reason, then she will have the full force of the MVP to use against you and potentially them if you end up aligning with them. And secondly, if they're pressuring you to go after her, it means that you can't use that opportunity to, as Spencer says, weaponize the MVP and take her in under your wing. So that might be a reason to just throw HOH no matter who you are. I can see why McCrae might want to win it for the reasons we went into earlier. Given that he's in this position now, though, I think the one thing I know for sure is I'm not putting up Alyssa with my first set of nominations. If she's going up at all, it's as a backdoor. Mm-hmm. Because that gives me the most freedom to try and work something out where maybe I can keep her if I want to. It just gives a lot of flexibility. If people are so set on getting Alyssa out, you can say to them, look, there's no reason to put it up now because she can then definitely play in veto. If we don't put her up, then there are 16 people here. It's unlikely that her ball even gets picked at all, so there's just no reason not to do that.
Yeah, no, I think what I'm thinking at least is, while I've had, a lot of people come up and say that they want Alyssa up and everything, for the reasons you just wanted to, I don't think I'm even considering nominating Alyssa right off the bat, and I can pitch it to everyone else as, hey, this is the best, you know, backdooring when there are so many people is definitely the call here. I honestly very much like the conclusion he arrived at, which were Jesse and Candace, which is no one's really good, like, they don't have any alliances. No one's really going to care. In a field of 16 people, I think that's basically what you're going for is unobjectionable nominations. And Alyssa is a bit too, almost too much of a heavy hitter with too much, I'd be scared for my life of production interference and MVP rules changing or whatever, especially week one, that I feel like Jesse and Candace were honestly pretty close to his perfect nominations, if not the perfect nominations.
Yeah, I completely agree. There's some argument for taking a shot at a strong player week one where, like, you know that everybody else just doesn't want it to be them. They're going to be happy to vote out pretty much whoever you put up there. And this is going to be, like, the easiest chance you have to go after somebody strong. The problem with that, though, is that there's a chance that that person could rally votes around them and then lead a counterattack next week. Whereas, you know, Jesse and Candace aren't going to be leading any kind of insurrection, no matter which one of them stays.
Right. And McCrae acknowledged what I would consider to be the downside of winning HOH, but for him it felt like upside, which is, I'm HOH, but the MVP gets to nominate. I'm going to let them put the blood on their hands. And that's what we, you know, ultimately ended up seeing when David ended up going on the block and then going out the door, is that it's effectively on Alyssa.
Yeah, and this could have been the perfect chance for him to turn that risk of Alyssa being there as an MVP into a reward if he can just align with Alyssa, work out what she wants to do, and have his nominations reflect that. Because as long as he can get enough other voters to make that happen, not only is he here in a strong alliance, but he also has the personal support of the MVP, which is just going to be completely invaluable.
Totally. Do we want to be getting into the idea of weaponizing the MVP now? Because I feel like that's a very strong idea. And so let's do that. Because I think it was Spencer mostly who was at least the one who's been using the word weaponize a lot, which is they realized quite quickly, given this format, if you have the MVP on your side, like we said, it basically doesn't even matter who wins HOH because they're going to get a nomination. The MVP is going to get to nominate someone, and we're going to have the votes. We, the moving company, or we, whatever majority alliance that also includes influence on the MVP, are going to have the votes. So it's totally fine. It's like keeping the MVP on your side and keeping the MVP predictable is a great plan here. So let's get into that idea.
So the basic idea here is that given that the MVP is going to have at least one nomination under their control every single round, then if they have enough votes that they can perform their wishes, or rather, if you can make it such that they have enough votes to do that, then you basically have complete power over how the evictions go. You don't have to rely on certain people winning competitions or whatever. You don't even have to consider that anymore. That you have complete freedom from doing that. So as long as you can get that base of support behind the MVP and get them on your side, then not only does your alliance as a group have control over it, but you, if you're the person who's closest to the MVP, you personally have control over it, which is why, to preview what we're going to say a bit later, I think Helen's in by far the best position in the game right now just because she's the one closest to Alyssa, and so she gets to decide who goes home every single round.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Yeah, I mean, I haven't even honestly thought about it. It's so much that's just been going on, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it means that when the twist isn't in place anymore, then Helen becomes a big target because she will have had all the blood in her hands. But for now, at least, she's pretty much unimpeachable.
So she's in the best position for as long as the MVP runs.
Yeah, and I think while it's in place, she can use that time to eliminate people who would be threats to her. Like, because before there was this risk where, let's say you decide to deviate from the natural plan and target Spencer early, for instance. Yeah, because before there was this risk where, let's say you want to break up Howard and Spencer because you see them as a strong pair, and you go after Spencer, you manage to get him evicted. Before, there would always be this risk that maybe Howard wins HOH next week and puts you up, and you know, Howard's a strong competitor. That's the reason you might want to go after that pair in the first place, so that risk is always at the front of your mind. Now, though, you don't even have to care about that. You can line up the ducks how you want and just shoot them down in order.
Right, yeah, and I think, honestly, generally speaking, we would be advocates for whatever it takes to make the game less competition-oriented, as I feel like competitions are effectively incidental, but in this sense, they're incidental for the wrong reason, which is it doesn't all that matters, like we said, is basically POV and everything else. The MVP, if they have the votes behind them, which in a savvy household is basically always going to be the case, is always going to get shots at whoever they want.
Yeah, because in a perfect world, we would like to see it going completely the other direction, where power is decided almost at random, like it could be literally at the toss of a coin. We understand why, for entertainment purposes, as a show, that can't happen, but we definitely don't want to see it zoom right to the other end of the spectrum where, like, external influences, whether it's America's vote or production or whoever, is deciding who has the power every week.
Right, yeah. Oh, I mean, in a perfect world for me, it's like in the Survivor, do you want to eat or do you want to play? Like, if you want your name in the HOH draw, go for it, and then we're just going to pull a name out of a hat for everyone who wants it. Yeah, so up next, I think it's worth at least mentioning, we get the Technotronics veto competition. Terrible host from the American Bacon competition, which will be canceled shortly, so don't worry about it. And McCray ends up trying to throw it, but wins anyway because he spelled an 8-letter word, by the way. And I feel like Russell won with a 7-letter word in BB11. Granted, so it's spelled like deli or something there.
Confirmed genius McCray right here. Like, if the rest of the cast can't muster up a 9-letter word, it's not surprising that they think McCray is some kind of savant.
Yeah. No, but I mean, I feel like misspell something intentionally or whatever, put the I before the E or anything like that. I don't know.
I mean, in fairness, it does have 4 syllables in it. It's very hard to understand.
Yeah, okay. So McCray gets the MVP, and now he has this opportunity because, like we said, everyone's been trying to get Alyssa up on the block, and it seems like that's what the whole house wants. And so a consideration McCray has to make is, hey, if I don't put Alyssa up, a lot of people could end up being mad at me. But when Nick comes and tries to pitch him not backdooring Alyssa just because he wants the target just so squarely on David, which I think is a reasonable idea, and also talks about the idea that we were just talking about, which was weaponizing the MVP. Like, hey, if we keep Alyssa safe, she may be inclined to work with us, and we would have the votes to back up whatever her nomination is.
Yeah, so there are basically two ways that McCray can play this. Either he can realize the potential that weaponizing the MVP has and do his best to keep Alyssa in the game, or he can realize the danger that that poses for him and just nip that in the bud right now before Alyssa has time to make any friends and therefore ensure that her support will go to somebody else. Yeah, he can just render that irrelevant and maybe make it a more open contest. Instead, he kind of ends up in this middle course where it all goes wrong for him, where Alyssa goes up on the block, but she doesn't end up going home, which means that the MVP is weaponized, but against him, or in theory.
Right, yeah, no, he pulls down one of his own initial nominations. Obviously he's not going to pull down David if that's going to be the target, but he pulls down Candace and puts Alyssa up. So what are your thoughts on this about, because I know it took some heat, the idea of vetoing one's own nomination.
See, I can understand why he might want to do that if the plan to vote out David instead hadn't really been hatched yet, but at the same time, I feel like if you're going to consider that at all, you would have to do that before you make that decision. Like, I feel like as soon as you put up Alyssa, you have to, after that, put your foot down and say, look, I decided this. I went along with what the house wanted. This is what we're going to do. And, you know, we're going to have a lot of time to take our shots at David in future weeks.
Right. And I honestly, it's tough because I feel like his concern, his major concern as the week one HOH was keeping as many people happy with him as possible. And so if he's got 10 people out of the other 15 saying, oh, come on, Alyssa's got to go up, I totally understand that impulse. But at the same time, if your main alliance that you plan on rolling with for a while wants David there and they don't want Alyssa up on the block, it's a very tough line to straddle. And that's, again, why the more of the downside to winning the first week HOH, especially when you're going to isolate the MVP in the process.
Well, see, this is why the secrecy of the moving company makes things so difficult for McCray, because let's say he changes his mind and decides he wants to keep Alyssa. In the next week, she's still going to think, well, McCray put me up in the first place, so how is he in any way responsible for saving me? The only way he can picture to her that he had a part in doing that was if he can say to her, look, I got Spencer's vote, I got Howard's vote, I got Nick's vote. But if he does that, then he exposes the secret alliance that he's in. So if he goes about saving Alyssa, it works out to the benefit of everyone else in his alliance, but it works out to the detriment of him.
Right, no, and you could see him, I think, the whole time wanting, almost wishing he could tell her if it was, like, some situation where she then would be bound to not tell anyone else because she was like, hey, come, I thought you wanted to work with me. Why are you putting me up here? And he's like, oh, you're not going anywhere. Like, yeah. Please go with this, right? Like, yeah.
Well, that's the frustrating thing. Like, it's Alyssa. Even if you tell her and she tells Spencer to keep you a secret, you know that she can't. So.
Right. Yeah. All right, so this brings us, I think, to the most awkward live show we've ever seen where David ends up getting evicted. And actually, right off the top of this, and I know we're going to be pushing this towards the end, but there was some – Julie gives in her little promo for the episode, like, coming up tonight, and people are starting to show their true colors. And it's like, oh, hey, they're finally going to address this racism that's been rampant among the feeds and has been the only thing making news. It's like, oh, wait, no, they're not. Although they do end up talking about it. And again, we'll be getting there when we get there, and I probably shouldn't have even brought it up in the first place just now.
No. So this plan is devised to get David up instead, and that's fine. You can understand that. It makes sense for both the moving company, who don't want a strong guy in the house. Also makes sense for the floaters like Candace and Helen, who, you know, they have no reason to want David to be there. So it seems like this is going to go down without incident. Of course, you know, Aaron and Jeremy are completely unaware of this. They don't know that this is what's going down. So this comes as a great shock to them, and you can see that on their faces when David ends up walking out the door.
Yeah, and you can almost, like, the weirdest thing for me was David's reaction himself, because I understand all their reactions. They're blindsided, but David seemed to, like, both be surprised, not be surprised, and not even care, like, at all.
Well, he was trying to claim to Julie Chen outside multiple times that, oh, this wasn't a blindside, he saw it coming. You can tell he didn't see it coming, and I don't think even if people told him to his face that he would have been able to see it coming.
Well, I wanted to ask about this, because he kept saying, oh, no, you know, people were acting sketchy. You should be like, oh, come on, no, this is definitely a blindside, right? And he'd be like, no, not really. And she'd be like, yeah, but it was. And it's like, I don't understand why she kept pushing the issue when it seems clear that he was just not going with it.
Being charitable to him, it might be the sort of thing where you see someone acting kind of weird, and then you register it, but you don't really think about it anymore. And then after you see the full implications of that, once you've walked out the door, it becomes clear that that's what it was leading into. And so, like, in... You know, with the benefit of hindsight, it looks clearer than it seemed to you at the time.
Okay, yeah, I can buy that. So I think the other thing, and we talked about this a little bit before about the live audience, but I thought it was very weird during the first rounds of voting before they, I presumably told them to stop doing this, the audience members would, like, react to every single person's vote as they were voting. Like, if it was for Alyssa, as in if they were voting to evict Alyssa, they would get booed pretty much. And people, they were reported on the live feeds when Candace was trying to sell people that, no, I did, in fact, vote to evict Alyssa. I could hear boos when I cast my vote. That's odd to me. That's why I don't like the live audience.
Yeah, and her being able to say that was what gave that story from her credibility.
Yeah. Right?
Because that's something which she couldn't make, well, she could make it up, but it wouldn't occur to you to say that unless you were actually there and had experienced it. And that's why I think that once they had started letting that happen, either they should have done it for nobody or done it for everybody, right? They should have let it carry on for all the voting or stop or made sure it didn't happen for any of it.
They should have made sure it doesn't happen for any of it. The audience should be told to be shut the fuck up when people are doing stuff.
Yeah, but I'm saying the moment it happens for one vote, they should let it happen for all of them because that's the first outcome from that point. Like, if any of the house guests were under any illusion that Alyssa wasn't the MVP before, they certainly wouldn't be after that.
Right. Yeah. Oh, definitely.
Maybe they thought it wouldn't matter because Alyssa would be going home, so who cares? But, you know, given that she's still there, like, that's something which could end up actually impacting things.
Right, and like you said, this gave Candace, although it took him a little while to believe it, like, Aaron, even despite this great story from Candace about how she heard booze, I think it was Aaron, who still somehow doubted her. But at the end of the day, that ended up selling them on understanding Candace's vote, and that's, like, way out of bounds for me, and that's why when people are voting or when competitions are happening, either I know they can't mute it when people are cheering super loudly and the competition's happening in the backyard. I would say live audience, you are only there to applaud in and out of commercial breaks and whenever the person walks out of the house who gets evicted.
Yeah, so David gets voted out, which by this point didn't come as a surprise. We knew from discussions on the live feeds from the days before that this was going to happen. But I think it's worth going into the events that happened a few hours before that, because this is what a seemingly innocuous thing is what ends up, I think, sowing the seeds of the moving company's destruction, because Spencer goes up to Candace, and for reasons that are still unclear to me, he seems to want to confuse her about how the house is voting. Like, he tells her that she needs to vote for Alyssa. I think maybe his intention was to make her vote in the wrong way, and so, you know, she can become an easy target for next week. But if that happens, then Candace can say, Spencer told me to do this. Why aren't you asking Spencer about it? And so not only does he earn her ire when this happens, he also earns the distrust of everyone else in the house.
Yeah, this was, I mean, when we got the opening shot of the week two play in that episode, when it became clear that the moving company was going to try to disguise their votes, I did not know that that was the case. Just watching the live feeds over that weekend, I was floored. I cannot imagine, unless I'm misdirecting my vote, I cannot believe one would ever consider it a good idea in week one to try to deny a vote.
Yeah, it's just, it wasn't even, okay, the thing about it for me is that it wasn't necessary for any reason. Like, it wasn't as if they needed to pull off some complicated deception in order to make the vote go down how they wanted. They knew they had the votes to evict David, whether or not Candace voted for them. I mean, that's the only reason they were able to sell Candace on this in the first place. Like, they couldn't do this if they were unsure about how many votes they had. So it wasn't as if they needed to do this for anything. In addition, the fact that Spencer felt comfortable being able to do this suggests that he knew how other votes were going to go, which means he was in an alliance with some people. And so if you're Candace and this happens to you, you have to start wondering about who that's going to be. Like, you know that it's not Aaron or Jeremy or whoever, because that's not consistent with how Spencer would want it to go. So who else is there that he could be with other than the guys?
Right, and I mean, props to Candace, because she quite quickly put all this together. But like you said, process of elimination makes this a lot easier than it looks. But at the same time, I think it was not to isolate Candace as much as to help disguise his own vote. And again, I feel like that's just entirely unnecessary. When David's walking out the door, people can't look past that the vote gets announced as 7-5. If they didn't announce the vote count, then that's one thing. But they always do and always have and always will. So seven people are going to have to eventually get the blame for it. I mean, blame may be the wrong word. But again, it just reeks of total fancy play syndrome, just FPS out the ass for the moving company as usual.
Yeah, and even if you do succeed in disguising your vote personally, there's still going to be questions about whether you know how the other votes are going to fall and why you felt comfortable doing that. So whether you voted against your own group, that's just, okay, so either you vote against your own group and earn suspicion from them, or you vote against the other side of the house and they're still going to be angry at you. So, like, there's no benefit to be gained here. Even if there was some reason to resent the people who voted out David, you'd have to be very unlucky for that to fall on you specifically. Like, why Spencer instead of, you know, McCray or Nick or Howard or whoever?
Right, that's what I understand the value in not wanting people to necessarily know, but they're going to eventually know. Like, you can't give them that little credit, and I'm all about being just reasonable as far as what other people are going to piece together. And I feel like when it's week one, that is a pretty spewy play, quite honestly, but trying to deny a vote.
Yeah, and also, the people who might get upset about it are the people who are trying to vote Alyssa out. Given that what you're doing is saving her and that she's still there, why wouldn't they just go for her instead of you? Like, they're not going to not want her out next week. So we bring this up, and it seems like it's something which should be kind of irrelevant, right? Like, maybe Candace gets ticked off at Spencer. Maybe he has to do a bit of damage control disguising the moving company. And that's fine. Completely standard thing. You know, you make a mistake and you recover from it. The problem is, though, that once Candace starts piecing this together in her mind, she's then able to go to Alyssa and Helen, who Alyssa started becoming close to, and the three of them start becoming very tight. And this is a problem, because now the two of them are locked tightly in with the MVP, who, as we've gone into in a lot of detail, basically controls the outcome of the vote every single week. And so now this idea that Spence had of weaponizing the MVP is an excellent idea and concept, but he bungles the execution by making this a seemingly small mistake.
Right, he allows someone else to weaponize the MVP because of his own mistake.
Right, like, why wouldn't you just go to Alyssa and say, look, I've busted my ass getting votes to save you, I have them, here are some of them. Like, you don't have to mention everybody necessarily. You can say, I think I've got Jesse to save you, you know, I've got Howard to save you, I think Nick, but maybe I'm unsure, I might have Amanda. You don't have to list them off one by one. All you have to do is make Alyssa think that she is in some way indebted to you for keeping her there, and you're golden.
Right, the entire idea of keeping the, like, I feel like the basis for wanting to keep Alyssa in there in that spot is because you feel like you can weaponize the MVP in the upcoming weeks. And like you said, I wouldn't dislike it at all if he did just run down and name every single vote he, quote, thought he had, right? Like, it doesn't have to be clear, and he can mix in, you know, I guess Jesse's on the block, but he can mix in Amanda in the middle of listing all the guys.
So, quick tangent then. Do you think it was a good idea for the moving company to want to keep Alyssa last week?
Yes, I do. If they can execute on it well, which would be, in my estimation, owning up to their votes and letting Alyssa know, hey, we did this to keep you.
I can see that. I wonder, though, whether it's worth taking that risk, because let's say Alyssa goes and it's up in the air who the MVP is going to go to. You can be pretty sure, just based on your experiences with them, that it's not going to go to any of the Aaron, GM, Jeremy, Caitlin side of the house. You also know that, just based on what you know of them, they're not smart enough, intelligent enough, nice enough to want to go after you instead of the people in the middle, the Helens and Jessies and Candaces of the world. So, you know, if things go the way you want, then the moving company can just roll over the house for the next few weeks. You don't need to take the risk and open up the door for exactly this happening.
Right. So I would amend that previous statement to say, I don't think there was a wrong play for them other than denying their votes and drawing massive suspicion.
Right, I feel like they didn't really have a bad play that week. Like, even if they somehow wanted to evict Jesse or whatever, they can do pretty much what they want as long as they execute it properly and divert suspicion away from themselves. It's the fact that they failed to do that and not the fact that they kept Alyssa over David or whatever that put them in this precarious position.
Right, it has nothing to do with the identity of the target if you're the moving company. It's all the same to you, quite honestly. Even knowing Alyssa, it's all just execution, and I think it was an F-.
Yeah, so David walks out the door. Jeremy, Aaron, and Co are understandably pissed, so they go to the HOH comp, and fortuitously for them, Aaron wins it. She probably cheated in the process, but it doesn't matter because she doesn't have any power this week, so who cares?
Right, and this is the thing, actually, just quickly on that cheating allegation. When you're Andy and Alyssa, once you see that they're getting away with doing it with their hands, start doing it with your fucking hands.
Yeah.
Stop complaining and start doing it. Like, if they're going to take advantage of the rules, you go ahead and do the same, because I think Andy and Alyssa win that competition if they did.
Well, also, given that Alyssa is the MVP, you know that is less likely to care about her cheating.
Oh, yeah.
If she's in power, then this is great for them. So
whatever Alyssa's doing is legal, and so everyone else can do that too. But if someone else can do more than that, then Alyssa surely can as well.
Also, I was thinking during that competition, surely, like, it's very easy to ensure that whoever you're paired with doesn't win HOH, you can just not try in the competition, right? And just let them have to shoulder the whole burden by themselves.
Correct. Although, do you think, I don't remember all of the pairings, but I feel like none of the pairings really had incentive to be doing, other than the ones that are just both outright throwing.
Yeah, so, hold on, they didn't let them pick their own pairs, did they?
No, they drew them randomly.
Yeah, I was going to say, because, I mean, maybe the draw just went luckily for all of them. Like, there were a few odd pairs, like Spencer and Amanda, I think, but other than that, all of them had an incentive to want the other person to win in their set if they couldn't, so
right.
It was fine.
But no, I think your point is definitely, yeah, if I get paired with Aaron there, if I'm like Spencer, I can easily, not that Spencer's going to be winning that anyway. But nonetheless, yeah, like, you could easily, if you're paired with someone from the opposite alliance, not that, like, and good news, you don't want HOH anyway, so it's, I'll be throwing it regardless. Yeah, so as mentioned, Aaron ends up being the new HOH because Jeremy has the longest legs and longest fingers and handed it to her. And so now I'm sure this was not necessarily production's desired result, given all of the racism and everything that was largely coming out of Aaron. But nonetheless, she's the one in power, or at least ostensibly. It's more, as we mentioned, basically immunity for Aaron, because she ends up nominating Alyssa and Helen, and despite winning the HOH competition himself, Alyssa is still able to put up Jeremy.
And Aaron seizes a chance here to put the Asian woman, the black girl, the gay guy, and the Riley on Slop. Just coincidentally, the four minorities in the house.
Right, and ends up finding another opportunity to put all of the minorities' keys in the box last during the...
Yes.
It's impossible not to miss that.
No symbolism there whatsoever. Yeah.
Right, yeah. Okay, but nonetheless, hey man, Jeremy's a beast, and he's there to compete. He's King Jeremy the Wicked, and he is going to win this POV.
He's the man, and he goes out and does it. So whatever else you might want to say about him, props to him for saving his ass here.
Yeah, man, guard your meat. Jeremy's coming. Yeah, and actually, one thing I wanted to point out, because after winning this, I know Jeremy wasn't a fan of the game in general, and apparently one of the pieces of advice that Mike Boogie gave to Ian very early on in the game is, if you win HOH, don't wear the HOH robe. That's, like, the worst thing you can do is just parading around the house, displaying your power. Jeremy wore his Vita medallion around his neck the entire night, just, like, walking around, abusing people, hanging out in the hot tub, just with the power of Vita around his neck, just making sure no one forgot that Jeremy's a beast and Jeremy's there to compete. Yeah. Okay. So, of course, Jeremy ends up taking himself off the block, and it's replacement nominee time, and so... When we were planning on doing this show last week, I was sitting here going, all right, Caitlin's going to be going up all day. We're going to be fine. Caitlin's going to get evicted. Anything else? The other consideration Alyssa was even thinking of was this crazy idea to put up Nick, which, as far as I was concerned, is basically Alyssa self-evicting. But nonetheless, Nick goes up as the replacement nominee. But don't worry about it, Dom, because even though he's my winner pick and my man crush, the moving company's solid. We got this. The votes are there. There's no way anything but Alyssa leaving is happening. Check that. Nick is now gone, so let's get into this. Where do we even want to start with Nick?
Okay, well, I think... Okay, I'm going to say, I think Nick brought this almost entirely on himself, but at the same time, and I don't think that this diminishes what I just said, I think it required a very unusual set of circumstances for this to lead to his eviction, right? So, it's weird, because Spencer needs to make this weird play last week, which leads to this group forming around Alyssa. Then Jeremy needs to win the veto and take himself off, which, you know, you're not entirely surprised by, because Jeremy's a strong guy. He's good in competitions. I mean, that's all he's good at, so he needs to have some selling point. But then, you know, Alyssa still has to make this decision, and it seems like it really shouldn't be Nick. And it's at this point that Nick's wolfiness really begins to take over, and it's that, I think, that gets him evicted. Just this inability to give Alyssa a straight answer when... It's not as if she's even asking him a difficult question. It's just, do you pose a threat to me in future weeks? Just say no. Like, it wasn't anything complicated. It was just a simple request. And the fact that Nick couldn't give a one-word answer means that I think he pretty much perfectly deserved to be evicted this week, even though it's obviously not what I wanted to see happen.
Yeah, I was stunned. That scene really stood out to me. It's like, I was at first thinking, you know, of course I was planning on coming in here and screaming about Grodner and the diary room influencing everything, which I will get to, because McCray definitely went into the diary room for what Joker's reported as an unusually long time, went in evicting Alyssa, came out evicting Nick. Nonetheless, I can't help but agree with you, as much as I would like to disagree, as always, but specifically about Nick, is it really seemed like he almost brought this on himself with just that one conversation with Alyssa, where it's like, dude, she's the one person left who can make a nomination, and she's clearly considering you. If you just say, no, I'm not at all even – why would you even think that I would target you? There's no chance he would go up. And I don't know – I'm so curious as to what that reservation was about from giving that answer, because it seems so straightforward, and Nick seems like such a guy who would know to give that answer.
But also, I think Nick comes across just as very naturally shifty. And so
oh, yeah.
When he fails to get that answer, it's worse than when – like, Jesse fails to give that answer.
I mean, failing to outright say no, it would never happen when you come across as like wolfy and shifty as Nick does, is basically saying yes to what someone is presumably paranoid as Alyssa. And that's obviously not the answer you want to be giving.
There was some fun speculation a bit earlier in the week between some of the house guests about whether Nick was related to Dan, because Alyssa had to say that everyone in there was related to some former house guest. And after the events of this week, I'm not sure whether Nick or Dan would be more insulted by that comparison.
Yeah, everyone else in the house is related, and they're just 1,000 times better than you at keeping it to themselves, Alyssa. Yes. Yeah. No, I mean, I can definitely see it, because I heard about this rumor that the Nick and Dan thing going, and who knows? Maybe McRae went into the diary room and they showed him a picture of Nick hugging Dan, just photoshopped on, wearing t-shirts like best cousins for life. Who knows? But, it was – obviously, I was a big Nick fan. So disappointed to see him go. I don't think this ever happens under, more conventional circumstances. I shouldn't say ever, because, again, it's the Big Brother house and, anything can happen. I don't think under normal circumstances this happens, though.
I don't think it happened this early. I think given that Nick was able to pull this off at all, I think this would have happened to him at some point. Like, he would have blown up inevitably, but maybe it wouldn't have happened for a week or a few weeks yet.
Yeah, the thing that just keeps standing out to me is, I gotta know what he was thinking when he was having that conversation with Alyssa, right? That seems like the entirety of why he got voted out, and I just don't understand that reservation. And so that, it's definitely a fault I could find with his game, as much as I would appreciate it, everything he brought to the show.
Honestly, I just don't think he entertained the idea that he could be going up, and didn't give Alyssa enough credit to think that she could actually pull the trigger and put him up. And in his defense, why would she put him up? I don't think it was a rational thing to do. Obviously, once you get that answer from him, it becomes a lot more appealing to put him up.
Yeah.
But before that point, before that point, why would he even be on your radar if you're Alyssa?
Right, and I also think he thought, I mean, who cares if I even go up? I'm fine with going up because I have the votes locked in for sure. Yeah, so actually, let's talk about these votes that were locked in for sure, because McRae ostensibly was part of the moving company for week one, and he ended up being the swing vote here, and I guess we'll get to Spencer and Howard's decision later. But what are you thinking about now as far as McRae goes? Because he, obviously ended up choosing to vote to evict fellow moving company member Nick. How much do you think Amanda had to do with that? How much do you think this was in his own best interest or what for McRae here?
Well, it seemed like Amanda was already drifting towards that group anyway, and we know that Spencer had already become suspicious of Amanda, and perfectly correctly, I think, given that this is what ends up transpiring. So there's automatically some... So there's some tension there already, and then whatever... no matter how strong the pull that Amanda has on him, I think McRae is smart enough to put that out of his mind and just think about it in terms of his own interests. And for some reason, he came to the conclusion that keeping Alyssa was better. It just seems weird to me because, firstly, everything else aside, he put up Alyssa last week. So even if he is joining this group now, that naturally is going to make her a little suspicious of him. And he's going to be the seventh or eighth wheel there no matter what. I think maybe his logic was that, to steal a thought from Spencer, he wants to be on the side of the MVP. But the MVP already has a much closer coterie around her. She doesn't need McRae or Amanda. And I think it's entirely plausible that, let's say, when Jeremy's gone and Spencer's gone, and it's just Gina Marie and Caitlin over here and Howard over here, who everyone seems to be in love with, I could easily see Helen or Alyssa deciding that McRae and Amanda need to be broken up now because they're both independent thinkers, they're both strong, they're both smart. Why not just go for them immediately? And McRae, even if he does go on some prodigious competition run, he's not going to be able to overcome the inbuilt rigging that the MVP provides. So,
yeah, no, I'm right on board with that. It seems like he's going because it seems to me like because he likes Amanda and because Amanda wants to be in on this, and wants Nick gone. It seems like that's basically what changed his mind, and it's gonna first of all infuriate the moving company, and second of all, he's just moving into number eight on the opposite side of the house, where as far as I can tell, there's no really good result for any of the near-future HOH competitions. He's always going to be in jeopardy, basically, no matter what.
Yeah, what's his long-term plan here? I don't get
exactly.
It. Especially now, he can't go back to the remnants of the moving company now. Jeremy distrusts him, Howard and Spencer distrust him. It's not like he has any parachute in case things go wrong for him now.
Right, no, totally. And he's already won both of the competitions in the first week, people aren't going to forget about that. He's going to have that stigma as a competition player for the rest of the time that he's in the house. So there's no, he's completely burning four allies, I think. And again, it's yet to be determined how much he truly ended up burning Spencer and Howard, because I think they both seem to eventually figure it out. But at the same time, evicting Nick seems worse for McCray than basically anyone else in the house.
I guess the reason you might want to do this is if you're aware that Helen, Candace, and Alyssa are a thing, and you want to stop them from becoming more powerful, and you judge that the best way to do that for now is, if you can go over there, you might be able to draw Jesse and Judd away, and so you'd have their votes, and now, even though Alyssa's still in the game, maybe that group as a whole has fewer votes when it comes down to crunch time.
That's possible. It just seems like you're giving up so much, almost with certainty, for a shot at maybe out, a couple weeks from now to sell Alyssa and Helen as the super alliance, when you could otherwise stay with the moving company, and then if and when that gets discovered, say, oh, you know, Spencer's the brains, Howard's the brawn, and then you're chilling there with Amanda. It seems like a fine situation for me to be McCray and stick with the moving company.
Maybe he thinks if he keeps Alyssa in there, then that Aaron's group is always going to go after Alyssa and, by extension, Helen. And so neither of those sides is going to come after him, at least for the foreseeable future. The problem is, though, that, for Spencer or Howard, for instance, that logic also makes sense for them. So they wouldn't want to go after either of those groups themselves. So why wouldn't they go after McCray and Amanda now, especially since they just turned on them?
Right. I mean, like we alluded to earlier, I think Spencer was absolutely right in thinking Amanda is the pressing issue as for back when the moving company was a thing. I still think she is. I think Amanda's got a lot of sway within this game and say-so within this game, and people would be very right to be concerned about her.
Yeah, and I think that's what happened, which is, my theory is how this went down, and this might be completely unformed, but I think Amanda wanted to go with this group. She was putting a lot of pressure on McCray. McCray saw that the moving company, by this point, was kind of a sinking ship anyway. The cracks were starting to form, and he thought, I don't want to be there when this all implodes on itself. I can jump now, make it not look like I'm being an opportunist, and because I can say to them, look, I was in this alliance before, but I chose to come over to you instead now. I am making the sacrifice for you because I believe in this. And maybe think that that's going to buy him favor in the long run. I don't think McCray is in a good position no matter what happened here, but I think that's partially a result of what he did last week, and I think, you know, there are options that he could have taken this week to alleviate that. So,
yeah, sorry for cutting you off. No, I maybe one idea that I just came up with is if he flips over to this other side, he can, we said, he can potentially at least hide behind the Alyssa, Helen, and, maybe even just make something up about an alliance forming on that other side in the event that a former moving company member wins the HOH. But at the same time, it just seems so thin to me to make such a big move and isolate yourself.
I could see if he was trying to scoop out the remnants of the Erin, Jean Marie, Caitlin group after Jeremy's gone. The trouble with that, though, is if you want to do that, firstly, you would vote out Alyssa, I think. You wouldn't jump over to the group that wants to save Alyssa. And secondly, I don't think that that's a feasible option anymore. I think the level of antipathy, both towards them and from them, towards the other house guests, is so high at this point that you can't do anything that looks like it intends to save them without coming across as douchey yourself.
Right, and it's also the idea of Gina Marie, Aaron, they knew some people would be voting to evict Alyssa, or voting to evict Nick or whatever. Voting to evict Nick. But they were not prepared for the majority of people to be voting to evict Nick, and McCray would be one of the people that was lying to them, which I think is less forgivable than just being openly voting to evict Nick.
Yeah, they expect this from Andy or Helen. They don't expect this from McCray, and so when McCray does it to them, it carries that extra sting.
Right, and you cannot possibly count on, if you're McCray, because once the number one philosophy behind playing Big Brother is you are not Dr. Will. You cannot mind fuck these people. These people will not trust you, especially people as I think that will play as emotionally as you can very reasonably expect Aaron and Gina Marie and Jeremy to be playing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So anything else on Nick before we move into the new HOH and the controversy?
Anything about Nick is I really hope we get to talk to him soon.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I have a lot of questions for Nick, so hopefully we can figure something out there. And I'm, of course, disappointed to see him go. Had a good time watching him play. You know, after week one, everyone was like, oh, Nick is the clear MVP if this were actually a voting process. So who knows? But yeah, definitely, rest in peace, brother, like I said on Twitter. All right. So let's get into it. We saw last night the new live HOH, and the winner is Helen. Now, this very much stood out to me, because I thought Helen should basically be auto-throwing.
My first thought with this was, I don't see any reason for Helen, or really anyone from that side, to win HOH, to be honest. Because, like, you know that Alyssa, if she's going to win MVP again, which, spoiler alert, she is going to be able to nominate, like, Erin or Jeremy or whoever, and you will have the votes to send that person home. Even if Howard and Spencer go over, then that group combined, like Howard, Spencer, and whichever of Erin, Jeremy, Caitlin, and Gina Marie aren't on the block, they're only going to have five, and your group has six, so that, you know, you have enough. The other group is completely fucked at this point. Like, they can't do anything. They are right. Playing four immunity, and that's it.
Right, as long as, even if it's two from your group on the block against one of theirs, that's still votes coming down 5-4 in your favor.
Yeah, and conversely, that means there's also no reason for anyone on the other side to want to win HOH either, because if you're Caitlin here and you win HOH, sure, you get to, like, nominate two people from the other side, Helen and Alyssa, let's say, but Alyssa's still going to nominate Jeremy, and if Jeremy goes down, Aaron's going up, and that person's going home. So you winning HOH doesn't stop your side from being decimated. All it does is ensure that you can't play for what is essentially immunity next week.
Right, no, exactly. Like we said very early on, just winning HOH when you're in that Jeremy, Erin, Gina Marie, Caitlin group, you're just, all you have is immunity. There's no point even making nominations.
The only people I could even see an argument for wanting to win HOH would be Howard and Spencer. Like, if they feel they really need to make a move this week to try and cause some chaos and get themselves in a better position. But even then, like, what are they going to do? Like, they...
Who are they going to put up? Because it seems like anyone they put up would ruin their position.
I mean, I guess they could try and gain favor with the house by putting up some of the Erin group. Like, that might be a good reason to win it, actually.
That's a good, I mean, it's not a terrible, it's a reason to win it, but it, like, oh, great, now I'm going to be number 9 in this alliance because I just did what they wanted because I had no other options.
Yeah, but I think that's better than being an active target for that group. So, I mean, I think they will be in the near future once Jeremy's gone.
Right, but I think by the time they become targets, the MVP will be over.
I'm not so sure about that. Okay. But I mean, I guess the alternative for them is if they try and flip over and put up some of the Alyssa group, but again, it's just not going to work.
Right.
I guess the idea might be if you put up two of them and try and put pressure on, let's say, Jesse and Judd to come back over with you, or... But I just think that association with Erin and Jeremy is so poisonous at that point that that's just not going to happen.
Let me just sum this up. Mission established, mission accomplished, Allison Grodner. That's it, like, you figured out a way to just ensure that every single week you can get your choice boot gone. Congratulations. It was very clever. It was very crafty. I hope we never see it again. I don't know why we are progressing towards getting closer and closer to BB1, considering what a raving success that was. But it's really until this MVP thing is over, it's not even a real game. It's Jeremy, Erin, Caitlin, Gina Marie are going to get picked up.
Yeah, and potentially Howard and Spencer after that as well, because like I said, or McCray and Amanda, because why would they not be, right?
Right. I mean, like, potentially before that. I think Spencer is probably the only one who might go before that if he's viewed as just too shady.
Yeah. Like, I can usually see once Spencer goes, Howard's able to ingratiate himself with that group, especially since, you know, he's very close to Candace, Helen seems to like him, Alyssa seems to like him a lot. You know, I can see him working his way in there. But Spencer, I think, yeah, he really needs to do something to save himself here.
Yeah, all right. So let's talk about if you're Helen here, I assume your target is going to be Jeremy. So are you going right off for the nomination or backdooring?
Well, I see no reason not to backdoor him because, again, you know that any of your side can use a veto to put him up, and you don't want him playing a veto if you can avoid it. So put up Erin and Caitlin, I guess, which also has the side effect of making them turn on each other, which they're already starting to do just because they're incredibly catty. So you can make them turn on each other. Jeremy's going to be pissed. And then if Jeremy doesn't win, you can put him up and he's out of there. And now Erin and Caitlin are still there and still going against each other. So it pretty much works out perfectly.
Right. As soon as Jeremy's veto chip doesn't get drawn in the POV draw this week, it's the end of the week.
Yeah. And for the same reason, with the MVP nomination, you put up Gina Marie instead of Jeremy. So you put the three girls up.
Yeah.
And then if anyone except Jeremy wins veto, Jeremy's gone.
100%. Yeah. I think, at least. But, I mean, hey, who knows? The Big Brother house, anything can happen.
Better than expected, Colin.
Definitely. All right, so let's talk, before we get in, I know I've teased this a bunch of times, we will be talking about the controversy very soon, Before we do that, who are you liking, now that we've seen them actually playing a couple of rounds, who are you liking going forward here?
Well, I'll qualify this by saying there are a group of people I like to go deep, and there are a group of people I like to win. For instance, like, I think that's an important distinction to make. So, Candice, let's say, I see no way that Candice leaves this game, certainly before Drury, and probably not for a long time after that, but I don't see Candice having any shot to win.
I see Candice having at least a shot to win more. I think the other people that will not be going anywhere before Drury would be Jesse and Judd, and I think Candice, of those three, has a good shot. Although I do think Judd has...
I disagree.
Okay.
Let's say it's Candice and Jesse. Like, I assume Candice would probably win that, but that never happened. Like, this is an entirely abstract exercise.
Well, it's still early. I mean, there's still 2 months left to play at least. So, again, this is the context in which anything really could happen.
Colin, Jesse is not going to blossom into some beautiful strategic flower. It's just not going to happen, okay? Just resign yourself to the fact and...
I guess in a season where the least popular players are going to be going out by force every single round until for however long Grabner sees fit, you're definitely right that it's going to be tough for Jesse to find a favorable endgame, and probably Candice too. But I feel like Candice is definitely more of a winner candidate than Jesse.
Especially since America doesn't share the mindless infatuation for Jesse that you have.
I wouldn't say mindless. I have in my notes here, because I definitely wanted to talk about this person, and I wasn't sure if they'd come up, but Andy, what do we think about Andy?
Andy is interesting, and he's very annoying, and I think other people in the house will share that assessment, because Andy seems to be in every conversation, and that's not because he's so well-liked and so trusted and so accepted that everyone just naturally wants to include him. It's because he goes and seeks out conversations to force his way into, and it's become like a running joke in the house and with the Lifey viewers at this point, that Andy is just always there. Like,
yes,
I've seen feed reports where it's like Andy is on all four cams at the same time just because he's everywhere.
It's twins. It's the twin twist. There are two Andys in the house and no one knows. Yeah. No, it's every single game conversation. I'm watching the feeds and within 10 minutes, Andy will be in the conversation. And it's, on one hand, it's like, it's great that this guy knows what's going on and he always seems to handle himself well in those conversations. But at the same time, what everybody's noticing, like one of the key fundamentals we talked about before the season started, is it's rational and reasonable, and you should be expecting other people to talk and have private conversations. You don't need to be privy to every single thing. You just need to be aware that it's happening. And I think Andy kind of wants to be privy to every single thing. But at the same time, I want to give him credit, because I feel like every conversation I've seen him having, he's doing mostly the right things. He's just there too often.
I think he comes across as far too earnest, though. Like, it's exactly like Reagan, where they're so... It seems like they're never relaxed. They're always just hyperactive. They're always there wanting to do something, wanting to be important, and that really registers everyone else, and they don't take kindly to it.
Right, exactly. It's I think, going to be very, very tough for basically anyone to say, oh, I'd love to have Andy as my closest ally, just because everyone sees him all over the place. But at the same time, I feel like there's talent there, at least.
I can see him getting along well with... you know, the young girls, as the gay guys tend to do, not to turn into Aaron, but, you know, I can see, like, Andy and Candice or Andy and Jesse becoming a very strong pairing. The problem with that, though, like, is the same thing we saw with Gary on Big Brother and Canada, where the type of girls that they're most likely to get on well with are the type that aren't really useful to you as an ally. They're useful to you as a goat, because you can almost certainly beat them in the end, but before that point, they're not going to be doing anything useful for you.
Right, it's like, oh great, Topaz is my ally. I'm gonna have her hang out there and then just
Suzette.
Right, yeah. Yeah, so I think, you know, apart from the people who are going deep, I lost my winner pick. I know you're probably less high on Spencer than you were preseason, so who are you liking to actually be in your candidates for winners?
Yeah, sorry for that tangent there. So I would say Howard, but again, just the game position that he's in makes me very reluctant to do that. I still think Howard, both as a person and a player, is one of the best there. But just how things are going for him right now, I would not want to express any confidence in that. So I guess I would just say Helen. Like, I wasn't too impressed with Helen just based on what we saw. I wasn't too impressed with Helen just based on what we saw of her in the first 2 weeks. It seemed like she was cracking under the pressure a lot. You know, she would be having these breakdowns, having these arguments. But I think the big test for her will be how she does in this week. Like, it's clear that she knows what the outcome is going to be. You know, one of the Aaron group is going home. But how she handles that, and most importantly, how she handles them, is going to be a good indication of what she's going to be like going forward.
I would be much higher on Helen had she not won this HOH. I think she would definitely be in my top tier of candidates. As things stand, I still have Howard. Number one or two. I'm debating.
Let me just jump in there, because I kind of agree with you, but at the same time, I think when the two sides of this obviously divided, I think winning HOH wins you a lot of favor within your own group, and I think we saw that. I know you went around to watch the feeds yesterday, but when Helen won HOH and there was this debriefing with the whole group inside the house, everyone was so impressed with Helen. Like they were so just grateful to her having won it that I think even if there was some strategic merit to throwing it there, just the good favor that gets you is, you know, more than outweighs that.
Oh, it's definitely, and again, there's so much time left that anything could happen, and that kind of good favor could definitely be building. But
also,
I think, oh, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, sorry, not to keep jumping in, but one of the things worth pointing out is, given that they control all the power thanks to Alyssa's MVP, it's not like Helen not being able to play next week matters at all, because
there's
still going to be Erin or Caitlin or whoever there to kick out instead.
That's a very good point that I hadn't considered. That's definitely true. So it doesn't, it's meaningless.
I mean, I say that less out of any confidence about Helen, although I do like her and I think she's displayed some talent at least, than for the fact that she is Alyssa's closest ally, and being the MVP's closest ally is the most important thing in this season of Big Brother.
Okay. Well, let me give you my surprise pick then, because I very much, like I said, like Howard.
Is it Jesse?
It's not Jesse, unfortunately.
Okay.
Because I think Spencer's going to pretty much always go before Howard if he doesn't win the veto, and I think once Spencer's gone, Howard's going to have like a... this is not a fat joke. He's going to have a huge weight removed from him because he's not going to be viewed as part of a cohesive unit. It's just Howard's kind of off on his own. And hey, I kind of like Howard, and it's not really in it. What's in it for me to evict Howard now? I still think Howard's going to be a long-term player. I'm telling you, when this game goes from three nominees to two, where I want to be, much like if I were a coach, I want to be no baggage. No moving company baggage, basically. No Jeremy and Erin baggage. No Alyssa baggage. Nothing like that. I want to be kind of a known quantity and likable and reliable and roughly a free agent within a decent group of people that I feel comfortable with. And that is exactly right. I think Judd is in a smashing position. And if I could trade in, assuming I got to maintain my own faculties, I would swap into Judd's position before anyone else.
Okay. Well, I am going to take issue with that, but not... I agree with the broad sentiment, but at the same time, like, when Judd doesn't really do anything and gets evicted in fifth place, if that happens, I don't think anyone will be surprised.
No, nor will I, but I think he's at least got... He's giving himself shots. Granted, and albeit, I think, entirely inadvertently, but nonetheless, he's still, I think, putting himself in a very decent position to rarely see the block, which is not necessarily an indicator of a great game, but... Nonetheless, I think he's going to be someone people are going to be approaching rather than someone that he's going to have to do a lot of the approaching. And I think he's always going to be there for the jury. I think he's almost always going to be there for the end game as long as he just kind of keeps his hands out of too many pots, which I think is going to be easy to do. Rocking that bear shirt, maybe the attraction to Honey is going to be a little bit more strong than normal. But nonetheless, I'm very much in love with Judd's position, and I would say Howard at number two for me. And I think Jesse is probably the biggest final five lock, but that is not a compliment.
Okay, I don't think Candace is a bigger final five lock, but no, yeah, that doesn't really matter. Let's not get into that debate. One other person I want to ask about, and I think there's not really a better time to bring her up, is Caitlin, or I guess Gina Marie as well, because I can easily see once Erin and Jeremy are gone, and they seem to be the main catalyst for drama, like I can easily see them being... they'll still be on people's radar, and they will still be like the default boots or the decoy boots or whatever they need to be. But I can see them stay in the game for a while people like Alyssa and Helen go after bigger targets like Howard and Spencer or McCray and Amanda.
Yeah, I think Gina Marie is going to be on the block three or four times before she gets evicted. I don't see why anyone's ever evicting Gina Marie anytime soon, right?
Yeah, I was trying to think of a good comparison, and the best I could come up with was Sharon.
That's exactly what I was thinking. But Sharon's
much
better.
Sharon, though, Yeah, Sharon was very well liked and seemed, you know, not incredibly smart, but certainly very capable and competent. And Gina Marie is not, to put it, not to expand on it too much, but yeah.
Right, I think she's going to play...
aren't remotely similar.
Oh, sorry. I think she's going to play the Sharon kind of role, but with more along, like, the chatty natty line. Where she's not getting evicted, because there's just, who's ever going to be scared of Gina Marie? She's never going to win a competition if she tries. She might win the small person endurance one if she like really wants it, but still, I think that's basically the only thing she can win.
Yeah, I think when she does eventually go out, it won't be because she's seen as some big threat to win the game. It will be because she will have annoyed people so much that anyone who tries to keep her on when they could vote her out instead like that will cause some backlash towards them, and they just don't want to handle the drama anymore.
Right, yeah, no, I think Gina Marie is going to be there for a very long time. I think it's going to take, unless something happens like Aaron or Jeremy goes out this week, the other one goes out the next week, and then kind of that momentum builds and Caitlin wins that next week's veto, I don't see how Gina Marie is ever not there through Final 8, Final 7.
What do you think about Caitlin then? Do you think she will be able to struggle on for a bit, or does she just get chopped immediately after Aaron and Jeremy?
I don't think it's going to be immediately after. It may be immediately after, but it's not going to be long after, I don't think. I don't think Caitlin's going to do very well once she has those people gone.
What are your general impressions of her? Because she obviously hasn't made a favorable one upon anybody except herself, but she doesn't seem like she's not nearly on the same scale as Aaron and Jeremy are.
No, she's not. She seems much nicer. Not spouting off relentless racism would seem nicer. Although, you know, she's banging Jeremy now, by the way, which we haven't brought up, but that's kind of interesting.
Mainly because we just don't want to think about that. Like, don't put that image in.
Yeah, you're welcome, listeners. No, I feel like Caitlin is much more capable in a general random season of Big Brother when she doesn't get drawn into that Jeremy and Aaron group than she is going to be this season. But as of right now, I don't think there's any chance she can do anything. And that's acknowledging that Big Brother, a lot of things can happen to Big Brother. I think it's already done for her. Yeah. All right.
Okay. So I could conceivably see, actually, like we're down to, 14 now? And assuming jury starts at 9, I think they're going to want all remaining members of that group out as soon as they can. They don't want any of them in jury. Firstly, because whoever goes to jury is going to have to live with them, but also because I think the thought of any of them having a say in which one of them wins, like, isn't something which they take kindly to.
Right. As long as the MVP thing's going on, they're going down back to back to back to back for however long.
Yeah. So I guess for the past hour and a half, or however long it is when you're listening to this, we've kind of buried the lead, which is obviously the racism controversy, which has engulfed not just the House, but it's now taken on a life of its own, really. It's seen national press coverage, which is something which Big Brother almost never does unless something exceptional happens inside the House. It's been trending on Twitter a lot. Big Brother 15 has been one of the most popular hashtags for the past few days, when usually it only ever is if it is on eviction nights. And, you know, this is really become an issue which CBS and viewers and like the wider community has become forced to confront. So we won't recap exactly what everyone has said and done. I think that's pretty universal knowledge at this point. We will link to a compilation of what's been said and done in the show notes if people want that in more detail. So where do we want to start here? Because obviously there have been a lot of questions people have raised in response to this. I think the first one, and probably the biggest one, is should they be kicked out of the House list? Should some action be taken against them by CBS? Obviously, there have already been some real-life consequences from this. Aaron's lost her modeling contract. Spencer's now on unpaid leave from his job, I believe. And Gina Marie's also been sacked from the pageant company where she works. So that's going to hit them hard when they come out. While they're in there, though, should they, you know, should anything else happen to them?
As far as I'm concerned, absolutely not. And here's why. Because, as you just mentioned, I think Spencer was already on unpaid leave, like, to go play Big Brother, but then his company is, train station, whatever, union, did issue a statement, certainly not endorsing his behavior. This is why I'm saying let them play, because good news here, life is going to punish these people. Like, there's no way Erin's ever going to have her name Googled without this coming up in the future. Like, this is, as you said, I've been watching Big Brother live. I live in America, unlike certain foreigners I know. I've never seen anything like this as far as national press for Big Brother is concerned. And it's unfortunate that it happened under these circumstances. But everybody who is aware of and not aware of Big Brother is, like, my parents, who don't watch reality TV at all, both came and talked to me and said, hey, you know, this is crazy. You should. They presented it under the pretext of, oh, you got to get off of that show. Come on, like, how are you endorsing this? But at the same time, like I said, life is going to punish these people in a matter of 2 months, not even, because they're all the offenders are going to be gone soon. And so for that reason, like, look, when you're in the Big Brother house, you are aware. Everyone is cognizantly aware, whether they are 24/7 aware of it or not. They know that there are cameras on them. They know they're being recorded. They know they're making a TV show. They know there are live feeds. What they say is fully on them. As far as I'm concerned, they should be thinking about everything that comes out of their mouth anyway, let alone stuff like this. So for me, it's The game is the game. Maybe, you know, who knows their motivation for doing it. Life is going to more than take care of this.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's a good point made in one of the articles about this. I think it was the NPR article, which we'll also link to if people want to read that, which said that if you think about the type of people who, okay, if you think about the type of people who are able to come on Big Brother in the first place, it's people who are either massive fans of the show and are willing to put the rest of their lives on hold for it, or it's people who have found so little success in life that they're able to take 3 months out of their lives to go on TV. And if you contrast that with something like Survivor, where it has a much higher reputation, you only need to commit, you know, a month and a half instead of 3 months, you don't tend to have that kind of demographics drawn to it. Whereas with Big Brother, it's no surprise you attract these kind of people. In addition, I feel like when you cast these type of people, you're casting them for entertainment. And so it's a little hypocritical to say, well, we're happy to have them there as long as they can cause arguments because they're unpopular, or they can get into fights because they're not socially aware, but they can't say what they truly think because that, you know, we just can't have that. We can't stand it. It offends our sensibilities. But I think you put these people in the house because of who they are, and therefore you shouldn't be surprised, and you're entitled to be offended, but not to be outraged when these people show themselves to be who they actually are. Like, you're putting these people under the camera 24/7 for 3 months. Their true selves are going to come out. Like, they're not able to hide this. So these people are racist, sexist, bigoted in general, whatever you want to call them. That behavior is going to manifest itself at some point, and it just so happened that it did so on a scale we haven't seen before. I think it's perfectly fine to say you don't like seeing this on your TV and you wish they weren't there. I don't think CBS is under any obligation to kick them out or to deprive them of the money that they're contractually obligated to.
No, and again, the good news is because of the MVP twist, these many of the guilty parties, I think most notably Jeremy and Aaron, probably in reverse order as far as guilt is concerned, are, which is crazy to think that someone's more guilty than Jeremy of this, but nonetheless, I think CBS, they're never going to let them win. Not that they would anyway, first of all. Second of all, I think they acted very responsibly, which is, I've seen several reports saying they've been told in the diary room, basically, hey, jackasses, tone this down. Do you not understand what you're doing? And apparently the answer is no. They're going to keep spouting it off. Or when Amanda goes and talks to Aaron and gets the kind of reaction that we saw. And I didn't see that happen live. I don't know how much of that was editing magic, but I can't imagine not that much of it was. I feel like that was generally Aaron's approach, which is, oh, I'm blonde, and they make fun of me of that, and that's the same thing. It's like, no, it's not. But she's 22 years old. I'm not trying to defend her, first of all. She's 22 years old. She's a fucking idiot, and she's going to get absolutely crushed by life when she's out of this house.
Yeah, if you go on Twitter and look at the things people are tweeting at her, like her Twitter account, which she can't reply to. Like, it's not as if these messages have any kind of direct payoff. Like, she's not going to see them for another 2 or 3 months. Like, there is just venom and bile being held at her, and it's completely justified. Like,
yeah.
Like, I'm not trying to say that she's a victim here by to any degree, but like, she is going to get her comeuppance one way or another, and the public reaction to her, both, you know, on social media and in real life, is going to be so, like, so intense and so visceral that, like, you don't need to kick them out to punish them properly. Like, if you're going to put these people there, the best punishment is to let them bury themselves. Let them say what they think and have people judge them for that. I think it's not only offensive to people who want to watch the show and the people on it, but also but it also helps them if you're taking them out of the situation where they're showing their true colors.
Like, totally, yeah. Let them pay for what they're doing.
Yeah. Your boy Judd had a great quote about Aaron, actually, where he said, if I win HOH, I'm going to ask for holy water to throw on her.
So let me ask you this. How do you think CBS – I know we feel like they're not under any kind of obligation to pull them from the game or anything like that. I think they've done their due diligence. How do you think they handled actually going about first putting it off and then finally actually airing and acknowledging these on the show?
I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall in that production meeting because – like, can you think of anything like this that's been said? I remember when in Big Brother 9, like, Adam made that comment about autistic kids that he worked with, and that received a lot of press, and I imagine he was reprimanded for that. But when you have comments being made over and over again by a group of multiple people, then you can't just not, like, that's such a big part of the story that you can't just carve it over and pretend it didn't happen. Like, this is going to come out somehow, whether it's contestants talking about it on the live feed, contestants talking about it once they're out of the house and doing interviews. This is going to make itself known, and because the live feed's in place now, people can see this happening. You can't just act as if this doesn't exist. And so if they don't issue some kind of response, it looks like they're just trying to cover it up, and that's more damaging to them than whatever controversy might be caused by the fact that they let these people in the house in the first place.
Right, and there's, you know, they didn't acknowledge, I don't think even Jeremy got a ton of heat during the segment. It's been mostly focused on Aaron, but Spencer did not get a thing.
Well, he got, in last night's episode, didn't he get that comment about Hitler?
Oh, did he? I was probably live.
I think so.
Okay. Okay, well, nonetheless, I feel like he's at least, as far as, he's gotten a lot of press as far as hitting all of the different boxes for racism, sexism, homophobia, whatever. I feel like Aaron's been getting most of the pile on, which she deserves, but it's certainly not been concentrated entirely there. That said, however they want to show this, as long as they're acknowledging it, that's fine with me. I feel like they've done, it's very, very rare that I'm sitting here praising CBS, but I think they've done basically everything right in this regard.
Yeah, and it's good that they're not trying to take any official stance on it. They're not trying to say, look, these people are bad, because that's just self-evident, right? You show what happened and let people judge for themselves. Obviously, anyone who's at all sensible is going to come to the conclusion that these people are fucking idiots and that they are going to deserve whatever punishment they get. But it's good that they're, at least in this matter, treating their audience like adults and letting them decide for themselves. I'm also glad that I think the treatment that each of them got is largely proportional to the level of offense that they've caused.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, Spencer's comments were delayed until this week when they were said, I think, around about the same time that Aaron was spewing all of her bile. But I think given that Aaron is the primary offender here, it makes sense to focus on her and not so much on, like, Caitlin or whoever, because she really hadn't said that much. And Jeremy, like, I feel like with Jeremy, obviously he's a dick, and part of that is the fact that he's a racist, sexist, bigot or whatever, but I also feel like that's just his personality coming through, and people can see that. They don't need to see the stuff to have a negative opinion about Jeremy. So it makes sense that they're bearing Aaron as a kind of as a metonym for the entire body of bigotry that's going on in the house.
See, the thing is, and this is going to make me sound like an asshole, but I feel like I'm very not a ton offends me. Even just watching these edited and televised segments, I got really uncomfortable with a lot of the stuff that got thrown around. And it's not like I generally, if it's not on TV, endorse racism or anything like that. It's more, it's just so staggering to me that these people are knowingly in the Big Brother house and still saying this kind of stuff. And the scary part is, I can't even imagine what they would say behind closed doors, you know?
Right, yeah. If you think about how, if you think about the reaction from, you know, straight white men, okay. If you think about the reaction from straight, white, middle-class men who have no, like, personal investment in these remarks whatsoever, if you think about the negativity that they feel towards these people based on what they said in public, think about what people who actually have a reason to care about these remarks in a much more personal sense. Like, obviously, everyone has a reason to care, but people who are directly, like, struck to the core by them would think about what they were being kind to say if they thought it was being aired in private.
Oh, my God. Neither of us has anything to draw on, but we see Howard even just, like, when he hears Aaron saying something about Helen in passing, like, just the knowledge that she would say something else when he's not around is got to be more than enough to really set him off. And I can't believe more people – it seems like Amanda is really the one confronting people about it, and who knows why that is. But at the same time, like, it's just such an uncomfortable idea. And again, like I said, the great news is the only people who agree with this and aren't just disgusted by it are complete fucking idiots like all of the people guilty.
Yeah. I can't think of a non-cliché way to say this, but, like, if you were able to look into Aaron's soul or Jeremy's soul and just see, like, the depth of their hatred for people who aren't like them, it's not something you would ever want to be exposed to.
I can
entirely sympathize with the people who just don't want any of this to be shown whatsoever and just want the people kicked out and to pretend this never happened, but I don't think that's the most constructive way of engaging with the problem.
Right, no, and the problem for me is obviously twofold. First of all, that it's happening. Second of all, I'm not so sure that Aaron's going to really listen to the people that are correct when she gets out of the house and say, this is completely unacceptable behavior. I think she's going to flock back to the like-minded people down in Texas. Not to suggest everyone in Texas. I think she's going to surround herself with the people who agree with her, because as a defense mechanism, you know what I mean? And it's not going to improve. And that's what's truly startling to me, is this is not going anywhere.
Yeah, I don't think that the whatever shock she experiences from the backlash she's going to get from this is going to transform it into a better person. It's probably just going to make him more defensive, more entrenched in whatever stupid belief she holds about these people. And I think if she does rehabilitate herself, it's going to be a gradual process that probably won't occur until much later in her life. And oh, same for Jeremy.
It's like Colton for me. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. I mean, this is not a remotely good comparison at all. But if you think about the extent to which, like, Michelle Noonan went off the rails after Big Brother 11, and you think she was someone who, in the house and before that, just seemed pretty normal, pretty well-adjusted, and now you have someone who is just completely off the reservation, when they're exposed to this intense reaction from people, they're not going to react well to that. If they were the type of people who would react well to that, they wouldn't have said this stuff or thought this stuff in the first place.
Right, and that's why I'm thinking she's going to more just surround herself with people who are going to tell her, oh, it's not that bad. You know what I mean? And to say, I think Jeremy's going to say, I don't give a fuck, I'm awesome.
Yeah, I have a little more hope for Caitlin and Gina Marie, but I think
Gina Marie will be by far the most remorseful. But I don't think it's gonna, yeah. Like, I don't think any, I think what we've seen out of her is clearly genuine and something that has been an issue for her for a long time. Like, you don't just become that way.
Sure. I think with Gina Marie, it's more like ignorance and a lack of empathy rather than just this visceral, primal hatred of people based on race or whatever that seems to just be a part of who Aaron is.
Yeah. This is why I'm so happy that my general philosophy is like, look, no one's really anyone. We're all just fucking human beings. It doesn't make it, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's bullshit. Some people are better than others, and we get to have a sense of moral superiority when we talk about them. And as podcasters, this is great, because whenever we have a lack of material, we can just go on a rant about how bad racism is, and it's fine.
Yeah, hey, look at us, taking the hard stance against racism.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, going back to what we said earlier, it's interesting that there is such... I mean, it's not interesting. It's predictable to a degree, but there's such wide exposure about this. Like, people who... I think their general perception of Big Brother is that it's a kind of a trashy show, which it is, let's be honest, and that, you know, it's not something which, if you were meeting someone for the first time, you wouldn't mention to them that you watched a show unless you were prompted. But now it's like, this has become a legitimate topic of conversation. Like, this is what people talk about over the water cooler. Like, did you hear what these people said, you know, and so on and so forth. Like, this is an issue which has captured people's attention now. And, like, the cynical part of me thinks, like, is the ratings for the season haven't increased noticeably, but given that there's all this buzz about the season now, like, is this good publicity for CBS in a way? Like, if they're not seen to be condoning it, if they seem to be taking a strong stance against it, like, this could be, like, a good advertising opportunity, dare I say it, for them.
Yeah, I mean, hey, when it comes to a TV show like this, I don't think there's any such thing as bad publicity as far as as long as they're not taking the stance of endorsing it, as long as they're actively saying, this is not at all what we're about, we wish this would end, but there's nothing, we can't intervene to any more of a degree than we already have, these people are going to get their comeuppance, you know, in due course. I think it's absolutely, CBS is at worst finding this a happy coincidence. That I don't think it's, I don't think it's just happenstance that the show switched back to Sunday, Wednesday, Thursday, so which are the bigger TV nights.
Are they? Okay, all right.
Yes,
I didn't know that, but I guess
Thursday's
it makes sense.
Yeah. Sunday, Tuesday, Wednesday is the JV league compared to Sunday, Wednesday, Thursday.
Okay, let me be clear. I'm not saying that CBS intentionally cast people who they knew to be complete scumbags so that they could say the stuff and get attention to them. I don't think that would be a smart thing to do, and I don't think they're the type of people who would do that, despite whatever else we might say about them. But I think this is... At this point, I think the reaction to it is kind of out of their control. It's like, I think the people who are reacting most strongly are the people who are devoted fans of the show, and they're angry not only that these comments are being said, but the show itself is being sullied by the fact that they're being said. Those people aren't going to, like, boycott the show or anything. They're going to continue watching. But I could easily see, like, people who want to advertise on CBS being wary about doing so now that this stuff is coming to light.
Right, yeah. It's just the people who kind of, like my parents, who's here... Oh, racism on Big Brother. Oh, that must, you know, oh, you should stop watching that. That's endorsing, you know, these terrible ideals. And, of course, that's not at all what's happening. And just, again, I totally stand by, I think, basically everything CBS has done as far as addressing this issue and their own stance on it and, you know, being open about finally airing some segments about it and having people give honest reactions and having, you know, the house, I think that segment where Aaron was addressed was a very important segment, maybe the most important segment of the season when it's all said and done.
Yeah, and also, they presented it in a context where it was clear, firstly, that other people in the house were upset by it, and that the producers and the hosts did not approve of this whatsoever. Like, it right. was introduced in a somatone by Julie, and we saw Howard and Amanda and people responding to it afterwards. There's no risk that, like, if you leave your 9-year-old in front of CBS unattended, they're going to watch this and start hating Jews or whatever. You know, this was presented in a way which, like, it was unambiguous what everyone else's stance about it was.
Yeah, exactly. There was, I'm sure by design, not that they would anyway, there was no applause from the live audience after that segment aired.
Yeah, no one wants to be the guy who's, like, applauding you, right? You know what I mean? The wild guy cheering on the racist, but...
So, as far as actually a TV product now, do you feel like this increases, decreases the value of Big Brother? Is this now making people aware of these social issues, or are Jeremy and Aaron great TV villains that we would ideally want to see, albeit never intentionally, again?
I don't think this is, like, opening up the social conscience or whatever. Like, these are issues which... If people weren't educated about them before, they're not going to be educated about them after watching Big Brother. But I feel like it's, given that this has happened, it's unavoidable that they're going to have to address them, and I think they did it in a broadly mature way. After whether Anna and Jeremy are good TV villains, I think they absolutely are. Like, they are perfect. They are the best villains you could hope for, like, in the same league as people like Colton or whoever. They might actually be even better, because with Colton, you always got the sense that, and maybe this was just his personality, but, like, he was hamming it up with the cameras. Not that he didn't sincerely think what he was saying, but, like, he thought it, and his manner was such that he conveyed it in a particularly bad way. With Aaron and Jeremy, you can tell that they actually think this, and this is just them being their completely genuine, unaware selves. And that makes them perfect. Like, this isn't like heroes versus villains, where, like, Randy ends up as a villain, Sugar ends up as a hero. Like, it's not contrived, it's not forced. These are natural labels to attach to people. Smart person at all, and it's like these guys are villains. The other side are, I mean, it's actually made better, I think, by the fact that the other side of the house, they're not perfect. Like, Alyssa's someone who, you know, she's not a bad person, but she's not someone who's easy to root for, I don't think. And similarly, there are other people there who have said and done things that maybe aren't kosher themselves. So it's not like there's this simple black and white narrative that everything's been forced into, but it's clear that there are people here who you do not want to root for, and you're actively rooting for them to fail. And that's, you know, that's what you want in a TV show.
Right, like with Colton, I think it came across like he was just trying to be funny, and he's just such an out-of-touch idiot. Whereas with these people, they're making these remarks to each other just casually, like clearly demonstrating that this is the way they think, and it's an entirely different breed, I believe.
Yeah, I think part of that arises from the difference between the two shows, where on Survivor, if you're saying this up in a confessional, you are aware that it can be chopped up and used and presented as part of a TV product. On Big Brother, obviously you're aware that there are cameras there, but it's not like you can have private conversations outside the reach of the cameras. Like, whatever you're saying just between friends or without thinking, that's going to be picked up and recorded. So there's less premeditation to it. One other thing I was going to point out is that, you know, we poke fun at David, and deservedly so, because the guy is just not, you know, it doesn't have two brain cells to rub together. But he seems to be pretty much harmless. Like, he's a nice guy. In his interviews, he's been, you know, pretty good about the whole thing. He never joined in the same kind of remarks that the others were making. Like, okay, sure, he laughed at them when they were being made, but he wasn't making any of them himself. And part of me thinks you actually have to have a certain level of intelligence to think this kind of crazy stuff that the others are doing. Because, like, when Spencer talks about praising Adolf Hitler and how eugenics is a good idea, like, you can't imagine David in charge of a eugenics program or anything. It'd just be, you'd have, like, mermaids and kids with five tongues, and it's just, like, you have to, in order to have this level of malice, you need to be with it to some degree. And, like, I'd much rather take the harmless idiot over the malicious, like, normal person, as normal as these people are.
Right, I feel like David would have been laughing at whatever those people had been saying, and I do definitely distinctly recall one time he made some comment and immediately said, oh my god, that's so racist. Like, he himself just said, oh, I shouldn't have said that, that's so racist. Like, clearly acknowledging he understands the difference, where I think you're right, like, he can't comprehend why someone would just blindly, it's almost like the innocence of a child, like how children can't yeah. lie. Like, they'll go up and tell a fat person, oh my god, why are you so fat? Like, David's like, oh my god, like, how could you just hate someone because they happen to be a different skin color? He just can't comprehend that kind of faulty logic, because there's no brain cells to rub together, basically.
Well, also, David just doesn't seem like the type to actually just hate anybody.
No, not at all. Yeah.
He seems, as chilled as you can possibly be, like too chilled, if anything. Like he just doesn't care. Like it's why would I put the effort into hating someone? Like it just doesn't.
Yeah,
and in that respect, he's more mature than half the people in the house.
Right, he's the hang loose lifeguard, basically, just like live and let live. And I think that's it's better than the opposite.
It's like, I wouldn't trust him with my kids if I had any. Like, I don't know how he's a lifeguard. I wouldn't, you know, give him any of my personal possessions to take care of. But, like, if I just needed someone dependable to trust or anything, then, you know, he would be a guy.
Yeah. All right. So anything else to actually add about this before we take off? I know this is kind of an abrupt ending, if this is, in fact, the ending. But I feel like, a lot's been said. I'm sure we're going to address it more in the coming weeks. But do you have anything else for now?
Not really. I've already spoken far too much about it and not very clearly, so I'll leave it there, I think.
All right. Well, thank you guys very much for sticking with us this long. We know, what else is new. We ended up going quite a while, but we thank you very much for tuning in. We can't wait to see what else happens. Sorry to end on such a relatively somber note, but nonetheless, we will talk to you guys next week, so take care, everybody.